Okay, good evening. My name is Bryce Thurgood, chairman of the RAC, and I believe we got a quorum, so it's tonight's Northern Regional Advisory Council meeting. So first off, we're going to ask the council to introduce themselves like we do every time. We'll start with the most senior person, Mr. Blazard. No, the senior member of the RAC, the most distinguished, smartest person, John Blazard.
Yeah, right. I'm John Blazard from Camas, Utah, representing agriculture.
Kevin McLeod, Plain City, member at large.
Aaron Johnson, Weber County, representing sportsmen.
Chris Hoekstrom, non-consumptive, from Ogden.
Matt Clark, also from Ogden. I am at large.
Randy Hutchison from Ogden, at large.
Melissa Wood, representing the BLM, out of the Salt Lake Field Office.
Paul Chase, out of Logan, representing the Forest Service.
Mike Lauder, out of Hooper, representing sportsmen.
Darren Perry, chairman of the Great Shoshone Nation.
Kristen Purdy from Ogden, non-consumptive.
Justin Oliver, West Haven. I am at large.
And I'm Justin Doling. I'm the regional supervisor for the Division of Wildlife, and I serve as the executive secretary, and I'm a non-voting member.
Okay, thank you. We'd also like to recognize Byron Bateman from South Weber, our Northern Region Wildlife Board member. He's here in attendance, so, and any other celebrities in Cuyo Camo sitting in the meeting, so, with cowboy hats, too. Okay, if you guys would all join us all in turning off your cell phones and trying to keep it somewhat uninterrupted in the meeting, so, the purpose of the Regional Advisory Council is to gather input from the public concerning wildlife management, policy, rules, and regulation. The council then makes recommendations to the Wildlife Board. The Wildlife Board considers the recommendations from the five Regional Advisory Councils and sets policy for all protected species in Utah. One thing we ask is please respect everyone's right to an opinion, even if it conflicts with yours. There is no need for clapping. And we got a big stick. Now we'll find some big people to get rid of you. So, the meeting will be recorded for the transcription of the minutes. The audio recording and minutes will be available at the DWR website. When speaking, please use the microphone and speak clearly into it when you're asking questions or making comments. The public will use the microphone in the middle and speakers should state their name and, if they wish, where they're from. One thing we probably never really failed, or we always fail to do, but I'd like to recognize all the division employees that come all the time that we probably never thank them for coming. So they are, I don't know why they're sitting on the wrong side of the room tonight. They've mixed things up a little bit, but anyway, thank you guys for all coming. Appreciate what you do for us. If you guys would take a look at the agenda for tonight's meeting, does anybody have any questions or problems with it? If not, we'll approve the agenda for tonight's meeting. The next business is the approval of the minutes from the previous meeting. Any corrections or any problems with that anybody has? Seeing none, those minutes are approved as circulated. The next item we have is the summary from the Wildlife Board meeting. This was back in January. This was from our December meeting. No.
Was it the first?
It was in December, right?
First.
First week of December. Yeah. No, December 6th. Our meeting was December 6th. Yeah, sorry, this is from our December 6th meeting, the Wildlife Board's December 11th meeting. So, let's see. The first motion was that they approve add to the action log that division review eliminating a second COR request for powered scopes on crossbows when obtaining an initial COR for the use of a crossbow during the archery hunt. The division will report its findings at the April 2018 Wildlife Board meeting. That passed unanimously. The first item of business that related to us was that they accept the 2018 Black Bear recommendations and rule amendments as presented by the division, including the proposal by the Utah Handsman Association on the LaSalle and San Juan units for fall season dates of August 6th to November 16th, with hound hunting restrictions from August 18th to the 24th, September 8th to the 25th, and October. Any weapon general season elk and deer hunts. That motion was made and passed unanimously. And then there was a motion that the book cliffs be included in the original motion. That passed 5-1. Then they brought up a few other points that related to the whole bear thing. And basically it all got repealed. So there was a motion that they negate the previous two motions but accept the division's recommendation amendments as presented. And that passed. That's what passed 5-1. So basically it just went with the divisions. We even actually changed our motion, but they had a few things they needed to work out before they could make the changes that they wanted to, so it just got passed as presented from the division. And then the following motion was made and passed unanimously that they accept the CWMU Advisory Committee appointees as presented by the division. So anyway, there was a lot of talk about a lot of things, and then nothing changed. So for now. Anyway, so now I'll turn it over to Justin for the regional update.
Well, good evening, everyone, and welcome out to our RAC meeting. Just want to give a real quick regional update, and I'll just highlight some of the different activities that are going on in our sections right now. So in our wildlife section, our biologists are out conducting sharptail and sage-grouse lek counts. They're also doing spring deer classifications. And if any of the RAC members would like to get out and join the biologists this spring, just please get a hold of me and I'll put you in touch with the appropriate person. They're also working with the habitat section to do some spring range assessments. That's probably coming up in April. And then they did complete all their spring pronghorn flights last week. They're still summarizing results from Box Elder County, but in Rich County, it looks like our counts are slightly below our population objective. And we've been working real hard to bring that population back toward objective, and I think we finally got there. In our aquatic section, they're working diligently on spawning walleye out at Willard. That's part of an effort to collect and fertilize eggs and then put them into our hatchery system. Go through a process where they actually turn them into what's called a triploid, a sterile walleye, that then can be stocked out into reservoirs where we don't want to have fertile walleye. And currently they've collected up about 10 million eggs, and they have a goal of 29 million, so they're about a third of the way through that spawn, and things are going quite well. Lee K Center, or Lee K Hatchery, is at full production for tiger muskie, and we should be able to meet all our statewide needs for tiger muskie stocking this spring if everything goes well. We've had some challenges with trying to raise tiger muskie, but I think we've got all the kinks worked out now, and we should have a good source to get those fish back out into our waters. So that's exciting. And then if you have interest in going fishing right now, Lost Creek should be good fishing as ice starts to come off. So I'd encourage you to go up to Lost Creek and try to wet a line. In our Great Salt Lake program, it was a record harvest year for brine shrimp cysts. They harvested 35 million pounds of cysts, and that's, of course, a raw harvest weight. So that's actually a new record. The program biologists are conducting bird and brine shrimp surveys. The waterfowl crew is conducting a waterfowl summit. And so if you're an avid waterfowl hunter and want to participate in the waterfowl summit, that'll be April 4th in our Salt Lake office. And they're currently working with contractors to roll Phragmites as an alternate to burning. We've kind of lost our ability to burn with the air quality issues. And so they use these big rollers and go out and roll the Phragmites. It kind of chops it up and helps it decompose quicker. And then they did have a real successful carp treatment at Farmington Bay and removed a fair amount of carp and should have better pondweed production this coming fall. In our habitat section, our habitat section worked real close with the Mule Deer Foundation recently on a project up at our Middle Fork, WMA. They planted about 3,000 seedlings. Everything worked out well, and we thank the Mule Deer Foundation for working on that project. And I think they actually purchased the plants, didn't you, Mike?
Plants.
Yeah. So I saw some video of that project, and it looked like they were having fun in a fresh blanket of snow, but good soil conditions. And then the funding meetings for WRI projects are coming up. There's several of those meetings where we select our WRI projects for the next coming year. In our outreach section, the community fisheries programs are getting ready to kick off with some ongoing training in those programs for the communities. And then the outreach section will be holding a turkey clinic this Saturday up at Hardware Ranch. So if you have an interest in learning how to hunt turkeys or just refine some of your hunting skills, there'll be a good clinic up at Hardware this Saturday. And then our law enforcement section is working on several trespass issues on our WMAs. We have seasonal closures on our WMAs, and in some years we have some issues with people wanting to access those WMAs early for several particular reasons. But anyway, they're working on that. So anyway, that's all I have unless there's questions. Okay, well, thank you.
Thank you, Justin. So we will proceed as follows. We're going to have a division employee represented from the division will come up and make a presentation on the agenda item. The next thing we will have is questions from the public, and we have to reiterate that usually every time, questions, not comments. Then we'll have questions from the RAC. Then at that time, then we'll move it back to comments from the public. And if you want to make a comment, just fill out one of these blue cards right here and bring them up, and you'll be able to have either 2 minutes if you're representing yourself or 5 minutes if you're representing a group. And at that time, after the comments, we'll come back to the comments from the RAC, and then we will make discussion and then motions on those items that in turn get sent down to the Wildlife Board. So, and then council members who wish to abstain would maybe state their conflict, and council members voting in opposition to a motion can provide their reasoning. So then, that being said, we will move on to our next agenda item from Covey Jones. This is an informational only on use of air bows.
Mr. Chair. Hello, I'm Kobe Jones. I'm actually not presenting on this item, but I was asked to introduce the presenters. And I'll let them introduce themselves too. But the important things are the rules, 15 minutes for the presentation, and then comments, questions, whatever. But if we could stick to that, that makes it fair.
Okay, thank you. 15 minutes or less.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. And Mr. Chair, I acknowledge you and the council here. My name is Steve Rawl, for the record. And I am a marketing schlep for my good friends at Shooting Edge. And we are here to present to you, if I can do this. I did want to say something that I know this happens with a lot of public bodies. I've served in some public bodies in the past. Thank you for your service. I know that rarely happens. And in the public bodies where I've had the opportunity to chair, I've stopped when somebody said thank you, and I've made all the other members sit quietly and enjoy that, because for our group it happened maybe once a year. So thank you. Who we are, Shooting Edge is a company that provides technically advanced shooting products for the sportsmen and sportswomen out there, and shooters. We specialize, in developing products that are made by and made for and field tested by sportsmen and sportswomen. The founder of Shooting Edge, his name is Marvin Carlston. You see his smiling face up here. That's an actual picture. That's not a Facebook mock-up. Mr. Carlston has contributed a great deal to the industry, the archery industry specifically, and he continues to create and invent new items. He's the founder of Gold Tip. He served two terms with the ATA, and he continues to be an innovator. He created the expandable broadhead and actually created the carbon arrow shaft. He's got other products as well, and we can talk about those, but we're here to talk about the Air Bolt. There's a sample of it back on the table there. There's some literature back there. If you didn't get it, if you'd like it, please pick it up. The reason we're here to talk about the Air Bolt, it makes an air gun a powerful enough hunting tool that's more than capable of taking large game. It shoots up to 500 feet per second, over 238 foot-pounds of energy, and it's more powerful as an archery tool, or in this case, potentially a muzzle loader tool, than crossbows or anything of that nature. Just brief history on air guns. I didn't know this till I started working with Marvin on this project. The Ghirardoni air rifle was actually created in 1580, and the Winbush or Wind rifle was one, a 46 caliber model adopted by the Austrian army in 1780. And Lewis and Clark actually used an air gun in the early 1800s as they made their way across the country, an air gun that was actually capable of shooting up to 20 rounds before it needed to be reloaded. You can do some oohs and ahs if you want, it's okay. What we're looking for is we're looking to have the air bolt and air gun combo designated an any legal weapon for hunting big game in Utah. We think the combo should be approved because it's an effective primitive weapon. It's a great starter gun for young hunters. We have a video not for tonight where a young man, 8 years old, used it to take down about a 500-pound pig in Idaho not too many months ago. It's fun, it's safe, and it allows for hunter retention, and we can talk a little bit more about that as we move along. There's been concerns that it's not capable of taking big game. However, it is, and it has done so. We've had some members of the DWR who've used it in the past, and I want to show you a quick video here.
Air bolt, 50 caliber air gun bolt.
Can you hear that?
Huh.
some accuracy testing now. We are going to do two groups, three shots each at 30 yards on target downrange. Got the gun aired up. We've removed the muzzle cap here just so you can see the loading process a little bit better. So we get the nock placed in there. Twist up those vanes and just push her on in. All right, see how she does.
Considered a legal hunting device for big game animals anywhere.
With that, Mr. Carlston is here tonight to field any questions you may have. Thank you.
My name's Marvin Carlston. You can see on the video, I was the inventor of the of these different products. And if you have any questions or concerns about anything, I would like to answer those questions for you this time.
So I guess probably the reason why you're here is because it doesn't fall into one of the rules, technically, that the division has for any weapon.
Yeah, it's not defined. There's my understanding, there's nothing says it can't be, but there's nothing that's defined. So we're just trying to take the uncertainty out of the use of this air gun and make sure that it is well defined as a big game hunting tool. And that's why we're proposing that it be classified as a legal weapon with a description of what it is.
Okay. Anybody else have any?
I got one, Bryce.
In the presentation, it said it was a primitive weapon. It looks pretty high-tech to me, so what kind of primitive, like, what does that mean, primitive weapon? What does that mean to you?
What it really means is the you've got the muzzle loader, which is a flintlock, which we consider a primitive weapon. It's kind of merged into new technology where it's in line. It's still classified as a primitive weapon. This gun was actually originally invented in the 1580s. So it's actually as old as the flintlock. In fact, it was actually used before gunpowder was really perfected. That's why it's classified in the primitive weapon. And then also it has limited capabilities. It's not a high-powered rifle. It never will be. It doesn't have the ability to shoot 500 yards like modern-day muzzleloaders do. But it puts it back in the class of your flintlocks or some of your earlier model muzzleloaders.
Okay, thank you.
Just out of curiosity, what is the effective range?
The effective range is basically 0 to 100 yards. We don't recommend anything past that because you are getting a lot of drop out of it. But 0 to 100 is pretty effective.
Thank you.
So with this weapon, I know it's any weapon, I don't think it would qualify to be during the archery hunt, but are you looking to have it be able to be used during the muzzleload season or just during the any weapon season, or what was...
Right now we're proposing just an any weapon season, But in the future, I believe that we would propose for use during the muzzle loader season because it is of the same vintage. It is a muzzle loader single shot gun.
I guess the question is just if they would get comfortable enough with the speed and the energy and all that to be able to justify taking a big game animal during any weapon season. So, Matt?
Question. I'm assuming that this is commercially available now?
Yes, it is commercially available. All the major air gun manufacturers are designing their guns to shoot these air bolts. We've had a lot of good public input on it. We have a couple of videos out there that have gone viral, and we're actually well over 9 million views right now between Jim Shockey's and Shooting Edge's websites or YouTube videos.
And that kind of leads to my second question. Is this has this been affirmatively deemed or classified in other states?
Yes, it has. Texas was the last state that just allowed it. There's 9 other states that it's already allowed. And in some of the other states, it's just classified as a primitive weapon that can be used in what they call a primitive weapon season, which is essentially muzzleloader season. So we're working to take it across the United States, but we are having some great success in the field with it, and population is public's liking a lot.
Sorry, I'm monopolizing your time. Are these mostly whitetail states, or are they, you know, elk, moose?
They've been mostly whitetail states. Southern states is kind of, you know, typically they come on first. Mm-hmm. And so whitetail has been primarily the animals that we've been harvesting with it.
So just two questions. I'll do them one at a time. How many states have actually approved it?
I believe it's 12 now. I just was told that Texas just came on just in the last few weeks. Unfortunately, I can't quite name all of them.
Okay. Just ballpark. Okay. And then this is just more curiosity than anything. I'm not certain what niche you're going for to fulfill.
Actually, what we're looking at is just it's for young hunters, hunters that have been injured that can't shoot high-powered rifles, can't shoot bows. It just adds another option for them. Air gunners have been around for, you know, like, say, 200 years, and they've also been trying to figure out how to harvest big game effectively, and we found the use of an airboat bolt or arrow greatly enhances that ability, because typically they are low-energy guns, and as we understand, low-energy projectiles wound animals well, but they don't take them down well. But with the use of an arrow, it makes it capable of taking any large game.
Any more questions? I guess we've got a question. You want to come up and state your name? And
Brian Jones. I've shot archery and muzzleloader for the last 35 years.
Sir, do you mind bringing the mic up to your mouth?
I would be happy to, thank you. So I had a question. He's looking to add it into the muzzleloader world because it is a assisted fire methodology of an arrow. So it doesn't fit in the archery world, but it is an archery projectile. So I would think you would also have the archery requirements for broadhead size and all of that to make sure your wound is sufficient that you currently do. So you'd need to merge those two if you were to go with putting it into either any weapon or in the muzzleloader world. I just wanted to bring that up, that you need to make sure you keep those rules. Otherwise, you're going to have archers saying, wait a minute, how come they don't have to shoot a 1.25? How come they? That kind of a thing.
Sure. Okay. Thank you. Any other questions? John.
I don't know if anyone can answer this. I was just wondering about the Pittman-Robertson tax or whatever you want to call it on firearms. Would this apply on this specific one?
Yes, it actually does. For some reason, we actually missed it on that slide, but there was some concerns about that. The arrow, being an arrow, does pay the tax. The broadhead being a part of that also pays a tax, and the gun is currently not taxed. What we're working on is an air gun industry. They're working on adding that to the Pittsman-Robertson Act on 35 calibers and larger that would be used for big game hunting. But if you actually look at the revenue generated from the use of a muzzleloader, there's a one-time tax on that at the lowest wholesale price of 11%. On the arrows, it's a reoccurring tax. And so every time somebody replaces arrows, they're paying about a dollar and five cents in tax on every arrow that is that's shot out of this air gun. So it creates a pretty good revenue stream over time.
I wasn't worried about revenue. I was just wondering about fairness.
Yes, I think it is being covered in the fairness side of it.
But I'm sure a lot of people like the revenue. Right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Any other questions? If not, we appreciate you guys coming and presenting this. I guess this is an informational that the division's going to... Kobe, do you want to come up and...
If someone were to have this rifle at this time and wanted to hunt in the state of Utah, how would that, right now, would it be
right
considered illegal?
No, it's not. It's not a legal weapon right now. So they couldn't. So what the division wanted to do is we wanted to take it around and get public input. If anybody has any questions or anything to say or any comments, feelings, thoughts, we're really neutral right now on this. And before we took a stance, we wanted to hear what everybody thought. So that's the main purpose.
So, go ahead, Matt.
As I say, are you in the process of conducting any kind of survey like you have with other issues?
We thought we'd take it out through the public process first. Yeah, and see where it went from there. If there was no desire to do it, there's no need to put it in a survey. But if there's some desire, some interest, some reason, then we'd pursue it further, for sure.
Chris.
Covey, as long as up to 12 states have approved use of this weapon, wouldn't it be appropriate to request survey results from those states if they have surveyed their current archery hunters and muzzleloader hunters to see what those folks think of it?
Yeah, I can understand that. Really, this is a social issue about Utah people, though, right? And I think that's where, if in Texas they want to use it, fine, but that doesn't really extrapolate to how Utah hunters feel. A lot of those eastern states also use crossbows, and almost all of them use crossbows in their archery season, but Utah hunters don't like that. So we don't. It's a social issue. The weapon is very lethal. I'm sure everybody, or most of us in the room, probably have seen the video of Jim Shockey harvesting the bison with the air bow. So it's not a question of lethality, effectiveness, accuracy, any of that. It's a question of, do the Utah hunters want this tool in the toolbox? And again, it's not a bow. And last time we sent out a survey on would they be willing to allow crossbows in the archery season, it was overwhelmingly no. So I don't see us ever heading down that road. It would definitely be any weapon.
Yeah, I'd agree. This will never hit the archery season ever. So this would be strictly any weapon. So I mean, it's personally, if somebody wants to go out and try a gun that's 50, 60 yard gun, and you're competing against somebody with an 800 yard rifle, knock yourself out. There's zero advantage. So if anybody here has real heartburn, I mean, we could just, I guess, more or less pass on to the division that, you know, we're open to exploring this. And as long as it meets the energy and the, you know, the feet per second or the, you know, all the recommendations or parameters that the division would feel comfortable with. So,
Mike, this might be good for you. As you miss enough and the animal doesn't hear you, you can put another round in there and they don't hear the shot.
All that time doing that.
Okay. Well, with that, we'll just probably, I don't think we need to, I think we just pass along to the division that we're, you know, on the record, we're fine with proceeding, so.
Perfect, thank you.
Okay, thank you. Okay, next item, thanks again for coming, you guys. Next, first item on the action log is Mr. Kobe Jones with the Bucks, Bulls, and once-a-lifetime permit recommendations for 2018.
Perfect. Thank you, Mr. Chair. That will we'll jump right into it. Okay, so 2018 Bucks and Bulls, once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations. And we'll start with deer. That's a cool buck, though, isn't it? It's pretty awesome. Anyway. All right. So this slide goes over general season buck harvest in from 2008 to 2017, this last season. And I think the real take-home here on your y-axis there on the left, vertical, is the number of bucks harvested annually, and then on your x-axis is the year. The take-home here is that the last 3 years, from a statewide perspective, have been some of the best deer hunting years in recent history. There are a lot of bucks on the landscape, and a lot of harvest, which is a good thing. Okay, so this graph takes a look at our buck doe ratios in the state over the last several years, starting in 1993. We manage two types of units that everybody's aware. For general season, we manage from 15 to 17. On part of our units, and then part of our units for a little bit more quality. Both extremely high quality when you look around the West, everywhere else. And we manage those for 18 to 20. We peaked in 2015 above both of those. And I think another thing to take home here is that this is on general season public land units. So when we run this, we exclude the private land units, so they don't skew the data. And we're still coming in very high at the very top end of that in 2017. Looking at our fawn production, on the left again, the y-axis, it's fawns per 100 does, and it's always good to keep this hopefully right around 60. The last couple years we've hovered right there just below, but fawn production is still looking good. All right, moving on to an overview of the 2018 general season deer permit recommendation summary. So in 2017, we issued 89,050 permits. And the 2018 recommended permits, if passed as presented, it would be 91,050. So an increase of 2,000 permits. And I know a jump like this might seem a little drastic. I think let's remember and keep this in perspective. We're still at an all-time low in Utah as far as issuing deer permits. If we look at a historical perspective, even back to the early 90s, we're issuing 150,000 permits statewide. So there's a lot of deer on the landscape, a lot of bucks on the landscape, and also this increase, it's a factor of unit-by-unit management. Unit-by-unit management, it's been great. It's allowed us to offer more opportunity where we can, and also to reduce permits where we need to get back to what we've agreed to manage to. So looking at that, on 13 units, we're recommending no change, recommending an increase on 10 units, and a decrease on 6 units. Breaking that down by region, here's what that looks like. So in the northern region, we're recommending an increase. I guess I should go over the chart a little more first, I'm sorry. In the northern region, on the left-hand side, you have the unit, followed by the objective. The last 3 years of buck doe ratios or classification data, and then the three-year average, followed by the 2017, the actual permits, and then the 2018 recommendation. Green indicates that we are exceeding our management objectives, and green also indicates if we're recommending an increase. Yellow indicates if we are recommending a decrease or below our management objectives. So on the Chalk Creek, East Canyon, Morgan, South Ridge, they can't give them short names up here. Like, I mean, full sentence. But Chalk Creek, East Canyon, Morgan, South Ridge, it's exceeding the objective and recommending an increase there. The Camas, exceeding the objective, recommending an increase there. And the Box Elder, also recommending an increase there. One other thing on this slide is that the units with the two stars are units that we approved an additional rifle season early in October. It's a shorter season. It's only 5 days. And we hope to take advantage of, some of these units have a lot of private land. And we hope to take advantage of deer being in different locations at different times of the year to provide that opportunity to sportsmen without the crowding issues. And so a percentage of those permits will actually be pulled out of the any weapon hunt and put into this early season rifle. For a total recommended increase of about 2,300 permits in the northern region. In the central region, we're exceeding in the Oker Stansberries and recommending a slight increase there. In the southern region, recommending increases on the Fillmore and on the Pine Valley. And both of those have that early season rifle hunt as well. And both are exceeding. And recommending a decrease on the Monroe. In addition to the overall, the three-year average, we often take trend to account too. And you'll notice that on the Monroe, where we're meeting the objective on our three-year average. However, we notice a declining trend and try to get out ahead of that. Recommending a decrease on the Fish Lake and an increase on the Southwest Desert and the Zion. So in the southern region, it's a net decrease of 200 permits, or less than 1%. In the southeastern region, recommending an increase on the 9 Mile with the addition of that early season. A decrease on the LaSalle's as that drops. And one of the things I think that you'll notice here, and I want to point this out, we are monitoring deer at a level that we never have before. Everybody remembers the harsh winter that we had last year on the cache. We ended up with about 10% fawn survival on the cache last year. It really took a toll on our fawns, and it showed up. And because of that, if you remember last year on the cache, before that showed up in the classification, we brought a cut last year, trying to get ahead of that. On the San Juan, you'll notice that we're quite a ways above the objective there, and we're not recommending an increase. And as we do deer survival and monitor these populations, monitor fawn survival and adult survival, it's very interesting to see how different units react. I don't think anybody would have guessed that on a year like this, we would have very poor fawn survival in any areas. The San Juan currently has had very similar survival of fawns to the cache last year. Currently, we're at 13% fawn survival. And one of the things we learned is, well, it's been a very light winter. That unit is heavily dependent upon monsoonal moisture, and they missed that this last year. And it's probably attributed to that. So the studies that we're doing allow us to make more proactive recommendations, and that's why you're not seeing an increase there. In the northeastern region, taking into account declining trends, we're recommending a decrease on the North Slope and on the Wasatch Mountains East, and an increase on the South Slope Bonanza Vernal. On to premium limited entry, these units are managed a little differently. As long as 40% of the harvest is at least 5 years of age or older, we recommend the same number of permits. There's no trigger to increase permits, but dropping below that would be a trigger to decrease permits. So the three-year average for the Henry Mountains is 71% of the harvested bucks there at least 5 years old or older, and for the Paunsagant, 51%. So we're well within those guidelines there and are recommending no change. We do, however, manage buck-doe ratios on premium limited entries with management tags. Where we have surplus opportunity, we like to allow hunters the chance to harvest those animals. As we see the declining trend on the Henrys, we're recommending slight decrease in those management tags there. And also, you'll notice the new hunt at the bottom on the Ponsagon that was approved last fall for the cactus bucks. On our limited entry units, recommending an increase on the Book Cliffs and on the West Desert Vernon. And we're recommending a decrease on the North Slope Summit. And the primary reason for this is just that we brought this hunt back. We tried it at 200, and it went undersubscribed. We had some turn their permits back in. It felt like that number was too high. We're going to reduce that number and see if and this feels more appropriate to what we saw in our surveys. For the late season, the limited entry late season muzzleloader permits, this recommendation is based on not this year's classification, because these hunts are approved in the fall, so they're based on the previous year's classification. So at that time, the Beaver qualified, and we're recommending 5 permits there, and the North Slope, and we're recommending 10 permits there. All the rest are recommending the same numbers as previous. On the Wasatch Mountains East, along with a decrease on general season permits, we're recommending a decrease in those permits as well. And the Plateau Boulder Kaparowitz, it fell below the minimum requirements for this hunt, and so we removed that in the fall. Okay, so if you look at this big picture, there's increases in archery, muzzleloader, multi-season, and late-season muzzleloader, and a decrease in any weapon, and that comes from that North Slope Summit hunt being reduced for an overall a slight decrease of 38 permits. All right, for 2018 general season limited entry elk, the statewide plan sets the spike bull and any bull permits as long as we're within the guidelines. We're well within the guidelines on those, and we're recommending no change. We are recommending 500 of the youth any bull permits. Here's a breakdown of permits by weapon type, season, and then we'll go through it by age class or objective. Okay, on this slide on the left, or is at the top is the age that we're managing for. On the left is the unit, followed by the last 3 years age data on harvested animals, and the three-year average, what permits we had in 2017, and then this year's recommendation. So recommending on the beaver, as we see in a trend increasing there, recommending a slight increase in permits too. The Booklist, as it's dropped slightly below, recommending a decrease there. And the West Desert Deep Creek, it's one of the units that we changed in the last elk management plan. It went from one of the lowest age classes to the highest. And so we're recommending another slight decrease there to come into that age objective. 6.5 to 7-year-old units. Recommending decreases on the Cache South, Mount Dutton, and Panguitch Lake. And recommending increases on the Monroe and the Southwest Desert. On the 5.5 to 6-year-old units, we're recommending an increase on the Central Mountains Manti. This unit has been at the top end of the age objective for a long time, and we have the ability to offer some opportunity here. As well as the LaSalle Mountains, 9 Mile Anthro, Plateau Fish Lake, again, been at that very top end of the age objective where we have the ability to offer some more opportunity. And Wasatch Mountains, still quite a ways above that. You'll see the dip on the Wasatch Mountains from 6.7 to 6.4. Part of that is that mid-season hunt that we implemented on elk. And as intended, they're not killing the same quality, the same age of bulls as they are in the early rifle hunt or that late hunt. an overall net increase on this of 80 permits. On the 4.5 to 5-year-old units, the Box Elder Grass Creek, recommending a very small increase there, Box Elder Pilot Mountain increase, and a decrease on the Cache North. On the 2018 pronghorn permit recommendations. Increases on pronghorn, overall increases on pronghorn. Last fall, we brought forward a new pronghorn plan that switches from a buck-doe ratio management scheme to an age-based management system. And what we realized in pronghorn is we researched this and looked through how we can best manage and offer as much opportunity as we can is that, and I don't know if you remember Dr. Larson's presentation or not, is that we have a lot of adult buck mortality on pronghorn, as high as 25% in unhunted populations. When we looked at what the age, last time we looked at the age of pronghorn that was being harvested in Utah was 2008 and 2009, and the average age of pronghorn on 700 animals was 3.8, almost a 4-year-old animal. And we realized that we were missing a lot of opportunity. We haven't increased buck permits much since then, but we have had some population growth. So we know that we're still at that top end and probably missing out on quite a bit of opportunity. And that's the rationale behind this increase. This next year will be our first year back getting age data on pronghorn, and we will adjust accordingly. The once-in-a-lifetime permit recommendations. Again, the new statewide management plan of moose reduced the age slightly, very slightly, and allows some more opportunity there across the state. Bison, in order to meet our population objectives that we've agreed to, there's an increase there, also in the bison archery. And desert bighorn sheep, a very slight increase there as well. And Rocky Mountain bighorn sheep, we have a new hunt on the Oak Creeks, and also on the Newfoundland Mountains. When we cut out there this year, we realized with the capture company that we had a surplus of rams and that we could offer some more opportunity out there as well. We have a new mountain goat hunt as well, which is very exciting on the LaSalle, and we increased the archery only permits for mountain goat. Those last slides, I'm sorry, they're in the wrong order, but that's all. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm surprised you know what the X and the Y axis are. I'm impressed. Okay. First of all, we'll take questions only on the presentation from the public.
Troy Justin, Sports and Fish and Wildlife. Many of you don't know, Kobe just got married here about a week and a half ago. So my question is, has she filed for an annulment yet?
That was day two, Troy.
No. Now, the question is if you could go to the sheep on the bighorns.
Sure.
And elaborate a little bit on what we did as far as the anthro, the Wasatch, and the Nebo, and combining those units just to get this rack familiar with the.
Yeah, that's a very fair question. We combined the Wasatch. The Wasatch and Nebo were always hunted together. And one of the concerns that we had there is we had alternating. It was open and closed to the. One year it was open to the sportsman's permit, the next year it was open to the conservation permit, which can be problematic. We'll leave it at that. And so in order to avoid that and create more fairness, we decided to lump that unit in with the Aviniquin, create a very large unit, and allow more opportunity to harvest sheep or a larger population. There's more sheep now available. And then we wouldn't shut that off. So now the sportsman's permit, and we changed that in rule when we took that through in the fall. They can both hunt that unit now.
And how many permits are you recommending for that?
Well, three permits.
Three permits. And then with the potential of the sportsman's tag, and also then we also have to issue a tribal tag, correct?
That's correct.
So there's the potential of six rams being killed on any one given unit, correct?
Troy, that is accurate, yeah.
Okay. All right, thank you.
Any other questions from the public? Okay. We'll go back to questions from the rack. And I got too. Do you see, first of all, do you see that as a problem that we take possible six off of one unit and one unit's going to get targeted and hurt that unit in particular?
So I'm going to try to answer this as best I can. There are portions of that unit that are definitely easier to hunt than others. And if all six sheep were taken out of Rock Canyon, yeah, I can see that as a problem. I don't. That's worst case scenario. I don't know that that would happen. Also, after they shoot the larger sheep, or after the larger sheep are harvested, I think hunters would try harder on some of the more difficult areas. And that's just me assuming. Could it handle six sheep harvest year after year after year? Probably not. But also keep in mind that the sportsman's permit and the statewide conservation permit holder, they can hunt any rock unit across the state and probably wouldn't hunt here if they didn't have the potential to harvest a large ram.
Okay. My other question, do you think, going back to the deer, I mean, the bulk of the increase on the whole deer is putting on the Morgan South Ridge, correct? I mean, that's...
It's 1,700 permits. Let me get back to that slide.
Yeah, which is a bulk of the...
2,300.
Well, no, it's...
General season deer, northern region.
1,700, yeah.
Yeah.
2,300 across the whole unit, 1,700 there.
Yeah.
Do you think that's going to create, a crowding problem, because there's very little public land, and in turn create a huge problem with hunter satisfaction?
So
on that unit particularly.
I would really like the region to answer this question.
That'd be awesome.
Thanks.
Randy Wood, Northern Region Wildlife Manager. The reason that it takes two lines there to write that in, and Kobe indicated we have long, that's actually three units. And the reason we run those three units together is because of the makeup of private land. Most of it is private land there. So two things look at crowding. In actual general season rifle hunt, there's going to be a decrease in permits there because we were recommending adding an early five-day season during the elk hunt, which will pull more of those hunts or those hunters into there. So I did really quick. We're probably looking at the general season hunt decreasing by 700 plus permits. So that should decrease the crowding there or that. But it is predominantly private lands.
Okay. I guess my question is 1,700 extra, 1,700 people, for the most part, are going to, would they be going on public land? Because private land, they're probably not going to change their numbers. The people they allow, will most of those people target the public land?
And I don't know that, but do we know that right now, what percent, Kobe?
We don't know. I don't know the answer to that. I don't have that right now.
Well, I'm crossing the line on the question and the comment, so I'll leave it as that. So.
Come on, Bryce.
I know.
I think the other thing, though, too, is I just want to say this, is that early season hunt, deer move, you know, and on all units. And what we're there's very few deer that think of themselves as private land deer and think of themselves as public land deer. And the timing of this hunt is different, and you're going to catch bucks in different places. And that's another part of this. The opportunity is there. I mean, we know it's there. That's not a question. Is it going to have? I mean, at 31, you know, there's good data in Colorado that says anything above 25, you start to negatively impact your population. You know, negatively impact your deer herd. Anyway,
Chairman May,
go ahead. Yes, please.
Just one other comment. If you look at the 1,700. And just think of it over three units, that's an increase of about 570 per unit. And that's, we manage that way, but that's maybe a little bit different way to look at it.
Okay. Well, he's saying that there's three units in that line.
Yeah.
And he's saying 570 on average per unit. breaking up between the three, but overall it's 1700. More questions?
I do. When is the next, when is the deer management plan up?
Next year.
Next year.
Okay.
Would the division consider taking the Morgan, South Ridge, Chalk Creek, East Canyon unit and looking at it different than buck to doe ratio? I just feel that you're getting false data with that unit. There's so much public or so much private ground that the public ground is being just hammered because the buck to doe ratio is so high in those units, but you're going off of how many, I don't know how many CWMUs in private ground. I just feel like it's not doing any justice to that unit doing the buck to doe ratio because of the amount of private ground. So when a hunter goes there and you're going buck to doe ratio, it's impossible to do, but if you were to go there opening morning of the general rifle season and go buck to doe ratio on public ground, I can guarantee you it is not 25 bucks per doe on public ground. Is that something that the division might consider?
Yeah, we've talked about some ideas on this, and I think that we would definitely be open to looking at other strategies to get harvest to manage for what we've agreed to manage to. And that's where we're stuck between a rock and a hard place, because we come every year and say, we're over here, but we can't issue more permits because that's crowding, or that's, it's not available, or those bucks aren't there. And honestly, again, that was the whole premise, or one of the major premises behind this early hunt is, and I hear that all the time, well, the bucks don't show up until late October anyway. Well, they're somewhere early October, and hopefully we catch a few more on public ground. I don't have all the answers to this one. It's tough, but we'd be open to it, sure.
And I respect, as you are following the deer management plan, that's why I did ask the question, because I understand what you're up against with doing that.
Let's look at some new ideas. We're open to that, for sure.
I have one more question. Have you been able to see the data yet on these limited entry late season tags as people applied this year? Are you able to see the interest in those yet?
That's all in. I haven't looked at it separated out. We ended up with 470 some thousand applications for big game, and I haven't seen it all split out as to what individuals applied for. I've just seen the net.
And same with the mid-season, or the two-season deer tags, have we been able to see the interest in the early as opposed to the regular yet?
I haven't seen it yet. I've just seen the lump. If we could get you that information, see what percentage.
I mean, if you're, like, are you asking, are people with a lot of points putting in for these muzzleloader hunts?
Well, that's one thing. I asked two questions.
We already know that from previous years.
Yeah,
they're spending a lot of points on these late season muzzleloader hunts. So so this year, I don't know. Previous years, 15, yeah. I believe at least 15, and up to, is it 17? At least 15, I know that hunters have spent on these late season muzzleloader hunts, and high satisfaction. The hunters have really enjoyed these hunts. The comments are all the same. Love the hunt. Could you run it a little later into the rut? And we said we weren't willing to do that. These are the dates that we agreed to with everybody, and we'll keep it there.
The second, just as far as the two-part season, I'm just curious if we've noticed that the first season, what the ratio were, what people were trying to get yet.
I don't know what it is. I can tell you that we're planning on allocating 20% of the permits to that season. So whereas before our normal breakdown was 20, 20, 60, we're going to go 20, 20, 20, 40 and see what that feels like.
Kobe, on the cash, was there any consideration to reducing tags? I mean, or is it just because it was the 15, which falls into the management plan that kept it from seeing a reduction?
Yeah, Mike, that's not the only reason. The other reason was the same thing we did last year on the San Juan, the same thing we did this year on the San Juan, we did last year on the cash. We saw this coming and took a pretty healthy cut last year. And because of that cut, we came in right where we needed to come in. We have good survival this year. We'll have a great yearly crop of bucks, and the opportunity's there. And that's why you don't see a cut.
Okay.
Any other? Aaron.
Is the box elder in predator management?
Regional question there. Somebody from the region like to get up and answer that?
No, it's not.
Okay. Chad, do you agree?
Oh, okay.
Chad looks too relaxed.
Yeah, he does. Any other questions? Go ahead.
Yeah, just to follow up on Mike's question, you said you'd reduce the cash county last year. Can you recall what the reduction was? Because what they're harvesting this year was what would have, the fawns that would have carried over last year for the most part.
Yeah, and there weren't many fawns that they harvested this year. So we went from 7,100 to 66 last year as we saw that fawn mortality just go down. So pretty healthy cut.
Melissa?
Do you think that's... Because that was my concern. I was surprised when I was reading. I thought there'd be another cut on that. Is that enough? Enough of a cut?
Yeah. And I understand the concern. What's survival? What's fawn survival like on the cash this year, Kent? Mid-60s. We've got good fawn survival. We'll have a great yearling crop. We feel like it'll handle the harvest at this number of permits.
Well, and to your question, the division is doing a study up there just recently.
Yeah, yes.
You can maybe comment real quick on that, just because that relates to the cash.
I think I'll let Kent comment on that, if that's okay.
Kent?
He doesn't get
we a, like to hear from Kent.
And Kent was heavily involved in this. When we came back after we met with Cash Sportsman, Kent sat down and he said, look, I've crunched some numbers. We've got a little funding. Let's do this. So, all right, let's do it.
Kent Hersey, Big Game Projects Coordinator. What we got going this year on cash, we've been monitoring survival on adults and fawns from 6 months old to a year and a half for the past, since 2007 up here, but we've been using GPS collars since 15. And so along with that, when we met with some sportsmen up here, there was concern over, what's going on with our population. Why aren't we getting the growth that we want? And so we know the does are pregnant. We know that survival can be really good, but we don't know what's happening with newborn fawns and why our fawn to doe ratios are in the 60s some years when they used to be in the 80s or up to 100. And so we started a study where we're going to look at that neonate fawn survival. We put a lot of vaginal implant transmitters in 25 does this past March. That'll help us locate the fawns shortly after they're born here in June, and we'll be able to figure out what's going on. What is their survival? If they're dying, what is killing them? And how can we take management to help increase that fawn production?
So, thanks, Kent. In addition to that, I should thank Jim Christensen. He really got that meeting going, and he's done a great job up here. One more thing. When we took body condition scores on the cash this year, they were the fattest deer. So whenever you get a reduction in density like that, like we had poor adult survival, poor fawn survival, we came in with deer that were in really good condition. Fattest deer we've ever seen as we've been doing body condition scores. And that's a good thing. That's a positive note.
Just to give credit, I think a lot of credit goes to this sportsman in Logan and the division, because this is pretty cool that you guys are working.
Absolutely.
I mean, new projects that haven't been done before, so kudos to both of you. Melissa.
Okay, quick question about the pronghorn.
Yes.
Justin presented earlier that the Cash, Morgan, what is it? Southridge, Ogden unit, that up in Rich County this year, those the surveys that you guys just did for population were underneath where the management plan has us at, yet we have increases in hunts, in all hunts for that population.
So this is a statewide perspective, the breakdown of those. Do you have those numbers, Randy, handy for pronghorn?
I have them if you want them. Do you want to tell you what they are?
Sure. And let's make sure we don't tie buck harvest to populations.
Because we're changing the way
we manage plans. Again, adult survival of pronghorn. Basically, just to simplify it and cut out everything, pronghorn hit their max in horn growth at about 3. They're 90% there at 2. There are several buck pronghorn that are 2 years old, and then they have 25% mortality, natural mortality, every year after that. And so you take 2 years and you lose all of that opportunity.
Randy Wood again. Kobe, I didn't find it, but I remember when they got done flying that they had a real increase in buck numbers. They were high on the buck side, so they wanted to increase those to bring that down. And it also goes back to what Kobe talked about. We changed how we manage pronghorn from the ratio to an age class.
So, and for the population, really, that's the antlerless, or I guess antlerless armor, the doe harvest.
You good with that, Melissa?
Yeah, I'll wait till comments.
Okay. Any other questions? No other questions. We will go to, can you make it at the comment, or do you have a question? Well, we're done with the questions, so we'll have to do it at the comment period. So, well, have you filled out a card yet? Okay, you need to fill out a card.
I'll fill one out. I've been on this. So I've been through this before.
Hey, well, just a second. First of all, you can state your name, but you have to fill out a card, and then you can do your comment first, and then you can fill out a card. So,
I'd like to do that.
State.
Darwin Mangan from Honeyville, Utah. Darwin Mangan from Honeyville, Utah. You've done well in managing the deer, the elk, the pronghorn, and all, but there's a part you're not managing. That's your losses. And you're not paying attention to what's causing your losses. When you lose fawns, pronghorns, and elk, and all, why don't you go in and do a study and check the bellies of your coyotes and your cats? That's where they're at. We have private property. Could we work something where the division goes in and works with the private property people, and maybe you can get some value out of it? They'll let you come in and hunt if you'll work the coyote problem. And I don't know how bad the cat problem is at times, but it's predator control. And if you had a objective on those, you'd never come close to it. You'd be way over. Anything I can do to help, I'd be glad. I left the military as a sharpshooter, but I need to get close enough to where I can get the sights on it.
Okay, thank you. Appreciate the comments. If you'd fill out a card. Next comment we have is Ryan Jones.
Ryan Jones. I live up Harper Ward on Highway 38. It doesn't have to do anything with property around me, but I agree with Marvin on the lions. I think when you see your population numbers, buck to doe ratio going down, one way to help level that a little bit is increase your lion permits. They like to take 1 to 2 a week, and so if you're getting short. The other one is on your being an electrical engineer and having a master in business and a minor in mathematics, your 3-year average, you ought to weight those because your numbers 3 years ago, yeah, it tells you something, but it's your trend that tells you more of what's going on with your herd. So weighting those might help you rather than just taking that. It looked like you did, though. I noticed you didn't change stuff when your trend was going down, so I think maybe you're already doing that. The biggest one I have, though, Bryce, is once in a lifetime. I've retired. I'm ready to go out and spend the time and the money to go do a once in a lifetime. I put in for a moose. I try to buy points on a goat. No, Mr. Jones, you can't. You can only choose one for now. Well, 64 years old, takes 18 points to get a moose tag or more.
maybe one animal in once in a lifetime, because then I got to start on another once in a lifetime and build up the points until things like you could increase your revenue if you'd let me buy points. Yeah, let me only put in for one tag maybe, but let me buy points on the other ones. Yeah, is that going to increase your points for when you get a tag? I agree. I understand the math on that. But your revenue will increase because I'm buying points. And I feel like my chances increase that I can manage my hunts better if I have that ability. You give it to the non-residents. And I know they pay more for a tag, and maybe that's why you do. But it seems like residents ought to have the same opportunity to put in for more than just one a year. Make sense?
Yes. Thank you.
I got to go teach some 11-year-olds how to stay alive in the woods.
Perfect.
So somebody's got questions.
Good luck with that. Thank you for your comments. Appreciate it. Next, Troy.
Troy Justinson, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife. First, let me tell you how we come up with our recommendations. You know, Sportsman Fish and Wildlife is a statewide organization. We have 17 chapters throughout the state. We have a committee chairman who oversees each of those banquets. And then when we have something like this come along, we actually invite the division to come to speak to our group. And these guys travel from all parts of the state to hear this presentation. And then we come up with the recommendations. This isn't something that I come up with, or you know, the management and SFW come up with. This is input from those people that live in those regions. So they do a lot, and I appreciate them, and I appreciate you taking the time to listen to us tonight. We support the division's recommendations with the following exceptions, one of which is that I brought up in the sheet. Our concern is the Wasatch going to get hit hard. Having a little bit of background in sheep hunting and those units, the Wasatch is the place they're going to end up. It's easier to hunt. Those sheep are more visible. Your trophy quality is better. And so our fear is it's going to get over-harvested and could get substantially over-harvested to the point that we could ruin that unit. It couldn't come back. So we'd recommend that only one permit be given, at the most two, with having the tribal tag there and then also the potential of having the sportsman's tag and the governor's tag. The other area of concern we have is that on the Pine Valley, we recommend that we keep those permit numbers the same as they were last year. I believe this is the first year that we're having that early rifle hunt. Our members down there are concerned with, even though we fall in that buck to doe ratio and the deer are doing good there, their fear is by having that early rifle hunt, it's going to cause those deer to move and it's going to increase the harvest on that later hunt down there. So they'd like to keep them status quo for 1 year, just to see what the effect is of this early rifle season down there. Second, which that would be the Manti. We'd like to see 250 permits cut from there. Even though we fall in that buck to doe ratio once again, as you look on your sheet, you're gonna see a dramatic decrease in the number of bucks per 100 does. And also that herd is below objective. We've got an issue there, and it's mostly on the South Manti. And our Manti boys are very passionate. They met with their local biologists. We'd recommend that we cut that by 250 permits so we can figure out what's going on there. Then jumping into the elk, we'd ask that the bull permits stay the same on the Manti, the Fish Lake, and the Monroe. Thank you.
I'm impressed you did that from memory. Kevin, you got comments? No more comments from the public. Comments from the RAC. Kevin.
This may take a minute, so put your hats on. As a grandfather, I've really recognized and become concerned about youth opportunity to hunt deer in Utah. And there are some programs that I think have helped that. There are programs in other areas, other hunting in Utah that are youth hunts, but the deer seem to be kind of left out of that. And when I grew up, the deer hunt was a big deal. And to some of my grandkids, the deer hunt is a big deal. We've lowered the age limit to hunt deer, to hunt big game, basically, and done some things along those lines. But I would like to propose and have the committee at least look at proposing that the division do a study based on the idea or the concept that youth hunting age up to age 17, when they hit 18 they're out of it, but up to 17 that they can buy a deer permit over the counter. We need, you know, I think we all recognize that our future is our youth, and hunting, we want to keep it going. That to me is an important part of my life, and I want it to be an important part of the life of my grandkids. Now I know that the thought of allowing youth to purchase a permit over the counter is a pretty big deal. How does it affect the overall permit numbers and the harvest and all those kinds of things? So that's why I say, if we could forward a recommendation or a proposal to the Wildlife Board to approve or request a study from the division to look at it, I think there are a number of ways that permits could be changed and allocated differently to allow that kind of thing to happen, even if it's, say, every other year, or you eliminate youth at that age from the draw. And, you know, there's a lot of things I think that could be looked at, but I would like to throw that out and hope that it catches some traction and see if we can get more youth involved. If a young boy or a young girl gets a permit to hunt deer, dad's going, and it's a family thing again. The draw is just too complicated for, and I'm not saying it is for us, but for the average Joe out there anymore that's working, you know, 8 or 10 hours a day and his whole life, they forget about it. So anyway, I'd like to throw that out.
Okay. I guess maybe one of the questions to ask is on the general deer hunt specifically, how many kids from 12 to 17 draw versus don't draw, and then kind of maybe send that to the deer committee, you know, to have them look at it a little further. Just, I can see some units, them getting abused, some of the better units down south, but at least look at it. Because I agree for the most part.
Yeah, I would hope that it would be worth a study.
Yeah. Okay.
Thank you.
Any other comments?
I just have a quick one. The numbers and the packet that was presented for the RAC to look at, it would be really helpful to have every single category have the objective, thank you, that unit has for the specific animals. I didn't see that for some of them, and so it was kind of confusing. I think that's why I had some of my pronghorn questions. So just in the future, that might be helpful for the RAC and for others who are trying to understand the decisions, and you guys could be a little more transparent that way.
That means add something to the x-axis. John.
I just have a couple of comments. I agree with Kevin about the youth thing. I have my grandkids are in the flood of the 12 to 17 year old, and about half of them don't dry out every year, and that's devastating for those youth to do that. I don't think it would make a whole lot of difference in the harvest to do that, but it would give them the chance to go hunting with the rest of the family. I also agree with the concept of being able to buy points for once in a lifetime. My wife's been putting in for moose for I don't know how many years, and my last check on the draw odds were that she has a chance of drawing out once in every 365 years. So that's not even once in a lifetime. It's once in a long time, yeah. Anyway, a once in a lifetime hunt is the only chance any of us residents are going to have. And we allow the non-residents to put in every year for every species. I don't see what that would hurt.
Well,
I mean, yeah.
On my own personal answer to that question, and it would apply to your wife too, is if I'm putting in for desert sheep and I have 15 or 16 points and I'm applying to get that tag, well, say somebody else finally draws their moose tag, now all of a sudden they get dumped in and they have 15 or 16 points. It's just, it makes your wife's odds worse and my odds worse of drawing that once in a lifetime tag, where if we only keep it to this that one species, then it increases my chances and your wife's chances of drawing that one once in a lifetime. I can't speak for non-resident. We're not competing against them.
But the only chance you have to draw out is when you put in, right?
Yes, so you have to put in.
So the numbers would go up exponentially, right? In every species that's desirable. True?
But the odds would get incredibly
I don't think the odds
worse.
I don't think the odds would change if you're only selling one moose permit in Camas. If there's somebody's got 3,075 permit or points, that they still only have one chance to get that permit. Anyway, that's just something that I kind of agree with. I also agree with the predator issue on fawn survival. The bobcat killed a deer right on the highway, right in front of the Camas hatchery a while back, a bobcat. And the guy that runs the hatchery went out and kicked it off, and it stood its ground and was going to fight him over that prized deer. But so I think we definitely have a predator problem. This last winter that didn't exist should show a difference in survival rate, but I don't know if it's really going to show too much of a difference.
Yeah.
We'll see.
The only nice thing is, like, I got a place in Idaho. Hunt coyotes up there, there's no bounty. You hunt them in Utah, you get a bounty. So that's the nice thing. Utah at least has a bounty to encourage people to go do it. And I think a lot of people take advantage of that, and that helps, drive more people out in the field. And then the other cool thing is these guys doing these studies to see why they're, they're aborting and why they're losing them will help us know. Yeah. What? Go ahead.
If you'll let me in the Atlas, I'll show you some interesting. So, we don't present everything here, but I put some extra slides in the Atlas because predation falls more on population. And for all the deer that we collar, now they're GPS satellite collars. The second there's a mortality, sends up a signal, comes back to us. We get cause-specific mortality on every animal. So we're doing this. We walk in, we identify the animal, and we see what was the cause of mortality. Sure, we have some unidentified, but that allows us to not throw money at things that aren't the cause.
Right.
If the cause isn't lions, why would we want to harvest more lions? If the cause is roads, we want to fix the roads. If the cause is, and so we are doing this. This is being done. And in the Atlas presentation, if you allow me, Mr. Chair, I'll show that.
Thank you.
The standing joke out on the west side of the state is that Utah's paying bounties for an awful lot of Nevada coyotes. So,
if they do get caught with that, I mean, there's possible fines and jail time, but you can
be pretty tough to catch, I think.
We caught several this last year, and it's felony misappropriation of government funds. It's a big deal.
That'd be interesting.
Good.
Good work.
Aaron.
I have a concern. First of all, I really respect the work that the DWR does, and I generally side with the science 90% of the time, and I side with it today. But I'm concerned about the box elder unit. It seems like the trend is going down, and they increased it by 400. Our last RAC meeting, they said that the northern region's 84% private property. That includes the box elder. So some of the concerns you had, I think a large increase like that may develop some negative social issues. And then another comment I had was about the book cliffs. The book cliffs is in predator management, yet they increased the tags by 35, which is not a lot, but it is a premium hunt. You know, you fit within the buck to doe ratio, but I think you're well below the objective level of the total number, and so I have a concern increasing that a little bit, and I'll leave that there until we kind of make it to the motions.
Okay, thank you. More comments? Okay.
Just with all the comments going about youth, we talked about grandkids. I have 5 kids of my own and just finishing hunter safety right now. And as you look at the trends of Utah, our population, I read yesterday, is set to be 5 million within 50 years. Unfortunately, there's no way around that we're going to have, you know, there's not enough resource to necessitate every kid that wants to do that. And so it's a difficult thing to try to do. So as me, I'm entering my kids in Utah, but I'm doing everything I can to hunt in other states and give them every opportunity, whether it be small game, whatever it is. You know, there's only so much resource that we can deal with, and unfortunately, we have to preserve it. And I think if we, as we give too many tags, it doesn't matter if it's a youth or who it is, you know, we could damage our resource. And so it's a difficult thing, and it's going to continue in the future. We're going, you know, as opportunity, you know, it's going to be there. And so I applaud the division that they're working on that, and I'm sure they're looking into the future of what comes. But if we want to continue to hunt and have our children hunt, we're going to have to evolve to meet the resource available, and especially with our populations. And so the other comment would be is the way things are going right now with firearms and everything, maybe these bolt things are a good thing. We might all be hunting, all of us, with bolts in the future if we don't have firearms. So anyway, that's all my comments.
Thank you. Any more comments? Oh, sorry. Darren and then Kevin.
The only comment I have is I wish we were a little more friendly to the archery people. And it's just observations over the years. I think you ought to be able to buy an archery tag over the counter anytime. The archery success rate is so low that I can't imagine that we'd ever put a dent in any populations. There's states that are around us. Usually the archery hunt for elk ends before the rut begins for elk. And so the rut is in any weapon. And so, I mean, it just seems like we're doing our archery people a disservice. And maybe it's the Indian coming out in me, because that's the way we always hunted. But I think we could be a lot more friendly to the archery people. I know a few archers last year that were not able to get a tag at all in a deer tag. And that's crazy to me, because they're not killing a big, big part of our herds. But it's more of almost a social thing to be able to go out and do that. And it's such a good time of the year to do it. So I would just ask that you maybe look at that and be a little more archery friendly down the road.
Thank you. Kevin?
Yeah, just a couple. And not to become a debate, we cater to and look at a lot of special interest. And I know that the division has to do that. We do that as society. And I think it's becoming more and more that we look at and sometimes cater to special interest. I just want to make one final statement on, and I think our youth ought to be our number one special interest, because that's our future. The other thing is, as far as the points and the draws, I think we all realize that a management permit is a once in a lifetime anymore. I drew a San Juan permit 6 years ago, didn't harvest a bull. I'll never draw another permit. So it's a real complicated, hard thing to deal with. And I say that because I understand all the complexities and how we need to manage the resource, but I think we ought to manage the resource with the highest level we can of harvest, and then give those youth the opportunity to get out and do that.
Thanks, Kevin. This falls more into the fall where we talk about percentages of permits that get issued to different. I mean, isn't not so much permit numbers now?
It deals more with permit numbers. That's correct.
I mean, not that I don't agree 100% with what you're saying, but it's just like almost like that when we target it, you know, keep this fresh on your mind, and then at that time say, okay, when we come to issuing so many tags, let's issue this percentage to the kids, or, you know, up at that time, not particular permit numbers.
So, and everybody's aware, right, that a youth can buy an archery tag over the counter. Everybody knows that for deer. Mm-hmm. So youth can buy an archery tag over the counter, and everybody's aware that they get 20% of the draw right off the top, and then get put back into the draw and get the chance to draw again, right?
Yeah.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that.
Thanks. And there's a mentor program. There's.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah.
Comments? Just one last comment I had is, you know, when somebody decides to make a motion, but, you know, particularly what they said on the sheep, you know, they're a pretty fragile resource, and I would hate to see, you know, one particular area get targeted and hammered really bad, you know, because it's a really visible, you know, and B, a really accessible. So hope somebody would take that into consideration on that Wasatch hunt. And then, you know, just like the southern guys on Pine Valley, you know, are particular to theirs, the central guys are particular to theirs, you know, I don't think it's not fair that the guys up north aren't particular to, you know, it's not that we're, you know, I mean, it's in our backyard, and it's kind of a, you know, we're looking out for it, just like Aaron said, either whether it's on the Box Elder or it's on the Morgan South Ridge, you know. The division's done an awesome job in the last few years building the deer herd back up. I mean, and it's great. We just don't want to put a lot of people and set them up for just a crappy camping trip, you know. At least get them going on a good hunt, so. With that, if there's any more comments and or motions?
I got one more comment, sorry. As far as this sheep unit where we combine them, is that a possibility? That's done for this year, obviously. Is that looked at that you could go back to three separate units?
Not right now. We don't intend to split that out right now.
The only thing we can do is adjust the numbers. Mm-hmm.
I'm in a hard place to make a motion because of that one thing.
So. I'd be glad to try. I'd be glad to try.
My hell. Go ahead. Go ahead.
I would make a motion that we commend the division for their study and their efforts and forward a recommendation to approve the big game. I don't even know the name of it now.
The Bucks Bulls once
Bucks
a lifetime.
Bulls and other whatever as presented, with the caveat that they take a look at the combination of those sheep hunts and analyze which is the best way to go as far as splitting those out, so they're not overhunted.
Okay. In relation to this particular meeting, though. To address it, the only thing you could do is, you know, say to decrease the numbers. Yeah, because we can't look at the breaking up the seasons until next fall. So if not bullying you to change your motion, but you can also okay.
But if you say we go back to the year before's numbers, which is one less. Right.
Well, we can't go back to the year before because it wasn't combined the year before.
I know.
So the only thing we can do is the division's recommending three. The only thing we can do is recommend either one, two, or three.
Okay.
If that makes...
Go ahead and make
I'll make a motion. I'll make a motion on the... Let me get the name of it. We're talking about the Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep, Central Mountains, Nebo Wasatch Mountains unit that was
Aaron, just 1 second. Since he has a motion, okay. Either we have to address his or we have to have him withdraw.
I would be glad to have him add that language to my motion. Is that okay?
Would either...
I'm just trying to move
you
this
You can either amend his motion... Or you can withdraw your motion and let him state it.
I just have a new motion unless he wants to amend his
okay.
own.
Are you good with that?
I'm glad to have him amend it, yes.
You can... Okay, so we have a motion.
My motion is that we approve the Buck Bulls and everything that was presented with the exception of the Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep, Central Mountain Nebo Wasatch, which we were trying to discuss the number. And I don't know, I have no idea. We have experts that said we should sell three permits there. I don't have any idea what to say. Obviously, there's heartburn.
Well, so do you want to discuss it before you
can? Yeah, so we have a motion on the table, so now we can do it. We have a motion, but do we have a second? Okay, we have a second, so now we can discuss the motion.
You can, yeah.
Okay, Aaron, go ahead.
I wanted to propose a different motion, and maybe we do that after, unless this carries.
Okay.
The motion I was going to make was specific to that. The Central Mountains, Nebo Wasatch Mountains, Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep Unit, that we reduce the number of permits to one instead of three.
Okay.
And then we can address other issues in here if we want to or make other motions.
No, but can we vote on the amendment first, okay? And then go back to the original motion.
Hey, at the Wildlife Board, they voted and then revoted and voted again. What can we do here?
We're just seeing if we can vote on the amendment first and then go back to the original motion.
I would be glad to have him put that in to my language, which I didn't have finished on that subject.
He needs to withdraw his.
You mean to withdraw my second?
What? You withdraw your second?
I can do that.
Perfect. Do you withdraw?
I'll withdraw my motion as long as he doesn't get carried away with
okay.
whatever else he adds to it.
Okay. So
I'll try not to.
Okay.
We've withdrawn the original motion, and we're back to scratch.
Okay. So I'll make that motion again concerning the Rocky Mountain Bighorn Sheep, the Central Mountains Nebo Wasatch Mountain Unit. The DWR recommendation is three permits, and we recommend that they only issue one.
And accept the balance?
No.
The division's recommendation?
No, there's other things I want to bring up that we can discuss. But
for that motion,
for that thing,
to respect him on that motion. Okay. So right now we have a motion to accept it as presented with the exception that we reduce the sheep permits on the Wasatch
to one.
From three to one.
I was thinking if we're able to.
Well.
Do you have other things that you wanted to add to that?
Yeah, no, not to this motion. I want that to be voted on and then.
Yeah, but if this is the balance plus sheep, then.
This has nothing to do with the balance, just that particular unit.
Okay, so we're gonna chunk this out then.
That's what I'm talking.
Okay,
about.
So right now, his motion, we're not accepting the division's recommendations on the whole presentation. We are only talking about the sheep on the Wasatch Nebo, reducing it from three to one. That's all we have on the table right now.
But my motion states that we accept the rest of the buck bulls and other.
You withdrew it, so we can go back.
Did
you can make it, yeah.
I thought we were discussing that, but we didn't.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll withdraw.
Okay, and then you can come back.
Okay.
Okay, sorry. So we have a motion. Do we have a second?
I'll second it.
Let's second. On this. Do we have any discussion on this particular? This is only regarding the sheep on the Wasatch, Nebo, reducing it from 3-1.
The reason I made that motion is I would rather err on the side of caution, where they're making this new unit this year, a larger unit, and see what happens. If they need to adjust it up next year, we can easily do that, but I would just err on the side of caution for that unit.
Thank you. Okay.
But the three other tags are still able to hunt there, right? So they're going to be up to four.
Potentially.
Okay. No other discussions. Let's vote on this one item. All in favor, raise your hand. Say yes.
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 All opposed? One. Okay. Motion carries on this particular. Eleven to one. Okay.
Before we make another motion,
okay,
I'd like to address some of the things that the SFW, the sportsman's group, brought up. I represent the sportsmen.
Okay.
And so I'd like to discuss some of the recommendations they made, and if the division wants to chime in or other RAC members, they can. I do recognize, I guess, the local interest groups or sportsmen that come up and put forth an effort to get involved, and I think that's the case here. We've received input from local outdoorsmen that would like some of these units to stay the same or be decreased. And to me, that has a lot of importance, and I represent the sportsmen that have made that. So I intend to make, unless there's more comments, I intend to make some motions following some of the SFW's recommendations. And I guess my proposal would be to do it maybe species specific.
I'd agree. I'd like to chunk it out. We've talked about sheep. I don't think there's any more once in a lifetimes. If there is, let's move to deer and then elk and then antelope.
Do we want to first give Darren an opportunity to talk about his...
Sorry, you're right.
Okay.
Apologize. Darren, do you want to state why you opposed the last motion?
Yeah, the only reason I opposed it, I'm all for conservation, but the division made this recommendation, and those guys are smart guys. And I'm just giving them the benefit of the doubt that they've done their homework and they feel like that was an acceptable number. That was the only reason I go with it. I'm not a subject expert in sheep, and most of you aren't either. So I just go with the recommendation that the professionals gave. So, and I would assume if the harvest objective was detrimental to that herd there, then it would change. So that's my only reason, but thank you for letting me state that. So
thank you. Thanks for reminding me, Melissa. Okay, deer.
I'll make a motion if there's no more comments on it. I make a motion that the Central Mountains unit for deer, the Central Mountains Manti San Rafael, the proposed unit permit numbers was 8,800. I make a motion that they decrease that by 200. And I make a motion that the Pine Valley unit stay the same. It increased from 4,200 to 4,400, so I make a motion it stays the same at 4,200. And this, my reasoning for that, once again, these aren't units I hunt. I represent the sportsmen. I think they've made an effort to, not just with SFW, but in general contact. Personally, I don't like the increase on the box elder, but that's just a personal thing, so I'm just going to leave my motion at that.
Manti was change it from what?
So the Manti would decrease the permit numbers by 200. So from 8,800 is the DWR recommendation to 8,600.
Okay.
And then the Pine Valley
stays the same.
Would stay at 4,200 instead of increased to 4,400.
Okay, so we have a motion to change two of the deer units, the Manti and the Pine Valley. Is there a second? Any discussion on the motion? Kevin?
Yeah, Kobe, was the division made aware of these concerns from the sportsman's group prior to you making these decisions?
I knew there were concerns on some of these units. Last night they read this same list. I knew that this would be their list of concerns. I don't think they're trying to... I don't think there's anybody trying to hide anything here. I don't want to speak too much to this, I guess, but I mean the Pine Valley's been perennially over objective. And again, there's good data out of Colorado, and our limited entry units, I understand it. We manage for high buck doe ratios. We're not optimizing population. But there's pretty solid data that says that you start to impact a population, especially in an area that's drier. 25 bucks per 100 does, you have less deer. So If we're managing our general season units, that would be my concern. If we're managing our general season units for maximum opportunity, for more deer and more robust populations, then that's what we should do. But and again, I understand. So most of this is social, is what I'm saying, not biological.
Okay.
Well, then I don't want anybody to get the impression that I think somebody tried to sneak something in either. It's just that I agree with what's been said. You guys work on your empirical data and you make decisions. I just wanted to see if you had that to look at in the equation.
Okay, thanks, Grant.
And I'll try to word this delicately, but this should be driven by the science and that type of thing. It appears the concern or objection is from one private organization. And that's not what should be driving it. I mean, it should be sportsmen's. You represent sportsmen's overall, not a organization. And my concern with the recommendation is it's being driven by a organization, a good organization, but it's still being driven by that. Not these are concerns from one group, not a large group. I haven't heard a large group express this concern.
This is... Just, well, two things for the record. This is a large group that obviously is, you know, very passionate about what they do. But another thing is 80% of the things we fight about here are social, not science. So,
I don't want to debate. I respect that. And just so you know, I disagree with SFW most of the time. I think Troy will agree to that. I argue with him a lot. And so... I'm not trying to show any favoritism here. I'm just trying to represent the sportsmen. And the only comments that we've heard from sportsmen were for these things. So I just wanted to represent that.
So. Okay, thank you. So his motion, to reiterate, Manti was decreased 200 permits from 8,800 to 8,600, and the Pine Valley was to have no increase to leave the permits the same as last year.
I'd like to make a comment on that Pine Valley.
Okay.
So I really quick, and I don't want to drag this on. I got to get home, but I know people that do hunt it from out of state, and it is a great unit, and I'd like to see it stay the same. And I don't hunt it, but I have friends from Chicago that come and hunt it every year. They draw friends with Pine Valley Outfitters. They hunt it, and I don't see a problem with keeping it the same. It's a good thing.
Okay. Thank you. Melissa?
Just really quick, looking at the numbers, I feel like the first unit that we were talking about, Central Mountains, Manti, I feel like the numbers and the science would justify that unit specifically decreasing those numbers. The 2017 duck-to-bill ratio, buck-to-doe ratio is 13.3 when the objective is 15 to 17. So we're definitely on a downswing there. As far as the Pine Valley, I mean, we're over. And our trend for that one we're going up. Oh, actually, we're going down. Sorry. But we're at the three-year average is 24.6 when we're supposed to be managing 18 to 20. So maybe I could support one with some of the science and numbers, but not the other, Pine Valley.
Okay. So we got a motion and a second. Let's vote on this particular one and move on. So all in, we need to restate it, and everybody's good with what we're talking about. All in favor of this motion, raise your hand and say aye. All opposed? So two in favor, 10 opposed. It fails. Do we have another motion on the deer and specifically?
I don't mean to put it, but would you make that motion where you were in favor of one and not the other?
Yeah, I can do that. I would make a motion that the Central Mountains Manti San Rafael unit, that we reduce the recommended number by 200 permits to 8,600 and accept the rest of the numbers as presented.
Four deer?
Four deer.
Four deer. Thank you.
I'll second that.
So we have a motion to reduce the we have a motion by Melissa to reduce the manti by 200 from 88 to 86 and accept the balance of the deer as presented, with a second by Aaron. Discussion on it? Vote. All in favor, raise your hand. Aye.
Aye.
Wait. All opposed? So motion carries 11 to 1. Kevin, you want to spill the beans?
I think just for obvious reasons, the division has done their research. I think Kobe explained it, and I feel like they've got the best information, and so that's why I opposed it.
Thank you. Okay.
I'll make this real quick.
Okay.
I make a motion for the elk that the Manti, Fish Lake, and Monroe units stay the same as they were last year. That was a motion brought up by the sportsman here tonight. Or not a motion, but a request from the sportsman.
Manti, Fish Lake, and Monroe.
Elk units
elk
stay the same.
Stay same. Everything else is presented. Got a motion from Aaron. Everything else as far as elk goes.
Correct.
We have a second. Justin seconds. Discussion on the motion?
I've lost the numbers. What's that actual reduction? I don't have it in front of me.
I don't either. Can you clarify what the stay the same means?
Thank you.
Sorry. You want to go back to that?
Was it recommended for an increase, Kobe?
Yeah.
On all three?
So the three units again, which were they?
Manti?
The Manti was 467. They recommend it go up by 480. Oh, there he is.
Yep, so there's the Manti. That would be the reduction there.
So 13 on one, Fish Lake is what?
Nine.
And Monroe? It's three. So a total of 25 permits. Any other discussion? Question? Okay. So we're basically taking, not increasing those three units, which would be a total of 25 permits. All in favor, raise your hand, say yes.
See.
All opposed. Okay. Motion fails 2-10. Another motion?
Do I dare try again?
Yes.
Absolutely.
I'm just trying to move this along, you know, right? I got a 2-hour drive to get home. With the exceptions of the changes which we already approved, I would move that we recommend to forward a positive recommendation on the total buck bull once in a lifetime with those two exceptions.
Okay, but I've specifically said let's chunk it out, so can you just do it?
So
for
everything
elk?
Else? Okay.
Well, just for elk. Just for elk.
Oh.
You can make it.
I just
present.
Want to do it for everything.
I know, but.
That's my motion.
Sorry. You can do it for elk, though. As presented for elk.
Elk? Okay, we'll play this game.
Okay, sorry.
Okay.
Second it.
Sorry, John. Okay. Motion and a second to approve the division's recommendation as presented. All in favor? Raise your hand. Wait, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11. All opposed? Okay. Chris, are you not voting?
No, I
did. Oh, aye. Okay. Motion carries 12-0. Okay. The only thing we have left
is pronghorn?
Is antelope, because I don't think there was any other once in a lifetime.
Make a motion to accept the DWR's proposal on pronghorn as presented.
I'll second it.
Okay. Discussion? Sorry, I just had to do it that way, John, to be fair, in case somebody had some other question. Because
well,
we started that way, so.
Okay.
All in favor? Passes unanimously. Okay.
Now?
So?
No, we still got to approve the rest of it, right?
Once in a lifetime, which is the balance.
Okay, so I make a motion that we approve the balance of everything we haven't messed with.
I second that.
While he's thinking over there, I'd really, really like to thank the division for the time and effort that they've put into this. I know in the area that I live, everybody's complaining that we've killed all the elk and now we're trying to kill all the deer. But I know that they've counted them and I know they're there. So
okay.
We need to support them.
No discussion. All in favor, raise your hand. Yes. Passed unanimously. Okay.
We don't have to approve the maps, do we?
No.
Thank you.
Covey, lumber. Oh, sorry. Go ahead, Kobe.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Chair. With that, we'll start with the 2018 antlerless recommendations, and we'll go with deer first. I love this photo, but one of the things is that people say this is how the division counts deer. So that's four.
Then you went around and counted them again.
Start again with our fawn production trends here from 2000 to 2017. And should we just go with vertical and horizontal, Bryce? Is that better?
Yeah.
So on the left side, the vertical there is fawns per 100 does and then the years. And again, we're hovering right around that 60, just slightly below. And we like to see it at least 60. We're close. Looking at statewide survival rates, remember that this data shown here is a year old. So this is for last winter. 2016-17. And this shows exactly what happened statewide when we had a more severe winter. We dropped below 80% survival on adults. It was a hard winter. And dropped clear down 30% on fawns. Lost a lot of fawns last year. That was reflected in our population objective, or population status, I guess. The population objective for the state there is at the top, 453,000. And on the left is the estimate, and on the bottom across are the years. So this year, we modeled the deer population at 363,650. And we know we're right on, at least within a couple. All kidding aside, remember that my statistics professor used to always say is, all models are wrong, some models are useful. And what this really does is it reflects trend over time. So the number is not exact, but it we did see a reduction in the deer population. On to antlerless deer permit draw. This year, we're recommending 1,955 antlerless deer permits. And just some rationale behind those and why we recommend antlerless deer permits. Antlerless deer hunts are designed to accomplish a few things. One, and I think very importantly, that they're designed to address deer population health. With all the captures and all the metrics and all the data we've been taking, every time we do a capture in December, we assess the health or the body fat of that animal. And in areas, we used to use habitat as a surrogate to say, well, this habitat's in poor condition and therefore we should probably reduce the deer population. And now we actually look at the deer and say, hey, these deer are in poor condition. And it's density dependent and we probably need to reduce some of these animals. So one of the main reasons is to address deer population health. Another reason is depredation. So we have depredation problems. It's a lot better for us to offer antlerless deer permits through the public draw and offer hunters and sportsmen a chance to go and harvest these animals than it is for us to do it ourselves. It has to happen either way, and it's always better anytime we can offer that opportunity. And honestly, landowners appreciate it too. They appreciate it when they don't have to do all the work, when the burden doesn't just fall on them. So depredation is another big reason. And third are rangeland concerns. We still do evaluate habitat and say, where are we at here? There's a lot of browse pressure here. We probably need to reduce this for the longevity of this population. Looking at this by unit, recommending new hunts on the Chalk Creek and East Canyon to address depredation concerns there. On the 9 Mile, there are two separate hunts there. One is in the Green River Valley to address depredation concerns there, and then one is near Price. On the San Juan Abajo, the boundary for this is actually the town of Monticello. It's an archery hunt inside the town of Monticello to help address those issues there. Wasatch Mountains West, up Sheep Creek, we had a fire on Winter Range this year, and we'd like to give that time to recover and reduce that population there. And then the Yoker Stansberries, we have both some ranging concerns and some depredation concerns in that area. We're recommending reductions on the Monroe, Panguitch Lake, and Plateau Boulder, and the reason for reductions is because, again, in those areas we don't need as many permits as we had in the past. We've started to get ahead and control the areas where we're experiencing damage, and the population health is doing better. On the Pine Valley, we're recommending an increase, and that's to deal with depredation in ag concerns. And on the Southwest Desert, this is just around and in the town of Garrison to control some damage we're having out there. For elk, the statewide population objective for elk is 70,000, and the modeled population this year is 80,000. We grew some elk this year. When we redid the statewide elk plan a few years back, we really worked to eliminate a lot of conflict with elk. We really worked to give private landowners tools to allow them to reduce those populations when we have conflict. And you can see, on a year where we don't have much conflict, those tools aren't as effective. Elk hunts often target winter range and areas, and this year we had a lot of elk at 10,000 feet. We were actually catching elk at 10,000 feet in January, where the year before we had 15 feet of snow. This graph represents the public draw antlerless elk permits over the last several years, from 2010 to 2018. And what you'll see here is in 2013, we peaked in antlerless elk permits through the public draw. And we realized something. We realized that elk are really smart and hard to obtain harvest to manage them at the appropriate levels. As we offered more permits, we noticed we didn't get a great return on our investment. We started to have lower success rates. And so with additional tools, and especially the private lands only permits, we realized that we could apply pressure on private land in areas and control the population that way, also alleviate the pressure on private landowners. If they didn't want elk, they had a tool now to allow individuals onto their property to harvest those animals, and also redistribute those populations to where we end up with elk that are, again, more available on public land. So that's that switch that you see there in 2017, where we're still offering a lot of elk permits, but they're in a different form. In 2017, and in 2018, we're recommending 10,090 permits through the draw, and then 9,100 of the private lands permits where those are appropriate. This is what the public draw permits look like by region, starting with the northern region. We'll go through the increases in the new hunts. If there are any questions on boundaries after this, I don't include the maps in the presentation because it would take too long, and not everybody's interested in every boundary, but if there's a specific boundary or hunt that you're interested in, let me know, and those are attached in the presentation as well. So on the cache, a very slight increase. Morgan South Ridge, again, an increase there. East Canyon, slight increase, and the Camas as well. There are many challenges to managing elk in the northern region, and it is a lot of the private lands. We're committed to working on this, and we're committed to managing to our population objectives. We have new hunts on the Cass Richmond Hyde Park, Cass Ridge, and North Slope Summit. In the central region, on the Central Mountains, Nebo, recommending an increase there as that population is up, and a very small increase on the Wasatch West. In the northeastern region, recommending decreases on the South Slope Diamond Mountain, as we're below the population objective, and in the Book Cliffs, and an increase on the 9 Mile Anthro. In the southeastern region, a very small increase on the San Rafael. There's a small population of elk there. On the La Salles and the San Juan. And a slight decrease on the Manti. We're below that population objective, and we understand that this will allow for some increase with that many elk, but we have room to build. We have a new hunt on the San Juan Elk Ridge. In the southern region, recommending decreases on the Southwest Desert, Mount Dutton, the Plateau Fish Lake Thousand Lakes, the Zion and the Pine Valley, and recommending increases on the Fillmore, Monroe, and Panguitch Lake. There's one new hunt in the southern region. It's on the Monroe, and this hunt is designed to protect some aspen that we have for aspen region after a project up there. There are two types of elk permits that are available, cow elk permits that are available over the counter. Antlerless elk control permits, and we use those where appropriate. A hunter may take an antlerless elk using the same weapon type during the same season dates within the areas of overlap between the boundary of the bucks, bulls, and once-in-a-lifetime permit and the antlerless elk control permit. And we've had these for quite a while now. And they work well on units where appropriate. Not every unit is appropriate for this. And then we also, as I mentioned before, have the private lands permits. And these permits are valid. They have long season dates because we don't know when that conflict is going to arise. And that's the rationale behind that, from August 1st to January 31st.
They didn't show up this year. Stayed up high.
Last year, we offered antlerless elk control permits on 12 units, sold 4,400, just over 4,400 permits. and harvested 474. Some of this is a product of when it's an elk control permit. Obviously, they're hunting a buck or a bull first, and this is secondary. We're planning it on 10 units this year, so we cut a couple units out. The Santa Fe we cut out, and we cut that out because...
Sorry.
No, you're fine. We cut out the Santa Fe because hunters were buying that control permit and thinking they could use it up on the Manti. And then another unit in the southeast region. Kent, which one was that? Range Creek. It didn't work as well there. For private lands only permits, this last year we sold 3,100 permits and harvested 715 elk. This is really interesting because the previous year success rates were almost double this. When we had the conflict, when we had the problems, the tool worked great. And when we didn't, we didn't get the harvest, which I think is a good thing. Here's what the private lands only permits recommendations look like by unit. And I'll just go through these and slowly you can probably. So in summary, we're providing tools to manage elk better by recommending public draw permits, private lands only permits, and Atlas elk control permits where it's beneficial and works on the unit. On to doe pronghorn. Okay, we're recommending a very, very slight increase on doe pronghorn permits this year. Overall, going from 750 last year to 760 this year. And if we break that out by unit, a lot of decreases in this region, recommending a decrease on the Box Elder and a decrease on the Cache Morgan Southridge Ogden. Recommending a decrease in the southern region there on the Parker Mountain Plateau and the southwest desert Milford Flat. We've had a pronghorn do really well on the Santa Fe and recommending an increase there. And a new hunt, we've had a population show up there that's huntable. And on the Fillmore Oak Creek, recommending a hunt there with 30 permits. On antlerless moose, before we go into the antlerless moose permits, we've done some great research on moose the last couple years in Utah. And one of the things we've learned is that there's definitely a density dependence effect. When densities on moose get too high, body condition goes down. And when body condition goes down, coupled with other factors, tick loads, parasite loads, they're very vulnerable. And we've seen that. We've seen in our time that we've been monitoring moose, we've seen two big crashes in the population. And we started flying moose in the late 50s, and since then they've peaked and crashed twice. And the intent of the antlerless moose permits is to level that out, to manage to a population that's sustainable, doesn't have that density dependence, better body condition, healthier animals. And with that, we're recommending an increase in antlerless moose, an increase of two permits on the Ogden, and a new hunt on the North Slope Summit. And when we caught moose out there this year, they were in poor body condition. And that's the rationale behind those recommendations. This is the last slide, but I did ask before, are you still okay with me showing some of the other? Okay, so these are the deer body condition scores. And this is just December. Some of this is December data, some of this is March data. So we caught deer in December, assessed body condition, percent body fat. There's some ways that we do this. If you ever come out on a capture, we can show you how we do it. There's actually a study where they took a bunch of different metrics. They looked at fat here, looked at this here, and then the way the study reads, they homogenized the animal. So after that, and then they looked back to see which of those measurements correlated with body fat and what that correlation meant. So when they homogenized the animal, they could see what total real body fat was. Now we don't have to do that, thank goodness, because Nobody owns a blender big enough, except Kent. So you can see on the cash, 13.65% body fat this last year. Really fat, healthy deer. And that's just some of the information that we're getting. When I talked about cause-specific mortality, so every time we have, this is just adult does, but every time one of these collars go down, the biologist gets in there as quickly as he can. We try to recover every collar within 48 hours. And we don't, we can't always tell, again, what the cause is, but every time we can attribute it to that. And then, I mean, on the Wasatch Manti, a lot of that comes from the South Manti. There's definitely a lot of lion predation there. So you can look at that and say, okay, if we're going to do this, we should probably target lions. That could be a limiting factor here. But if we invested that down on the San Juan, if we raised harvest on lions on the San Juan, it wouldn't help the deer at all. And that's what we're trying to do, is not just throw money at something, is to say, all right, what really is limiting this population? And the study on the cache will do exactly that. We can follow those deer from birth, which we couldn't do without vaginal implant transmitters, and from 0 to 6 months, and say, okay, what are we losing fawns to? And we already know what we're losing fawns from 6 months to a year to, and we know what we're losing adults to. Statewide survival rates. This graph is really hard to see, but ignore the red line. We didn't have enough collars out there, but the purple line is this year, and we're still above for a statewide fawn survival. It's the best year out of the last 3 years, so we're doing better than we have. And these are those same causes of death for fawns that are 6 months old or older. So it pretty cool data, fun stuff to look at. I just thought I'd show it. Okay, any questions?
Thank you. That is pretty cool to see. Questions from the public on the presentation? Questions from the rack on the presentation? No questions? Go back to comments. From comments from the Troy.
Troy Justinson, Sports and Fish and Wildlife. Kobe, just, you know, along with my comments, answer a question for me. Do you base all your decisions 100% on science?
No. That's so. Can I answer it
fully? Well, I'm asking. Yeah.
Sure. So, the way I see our job is there's a million right ways to manage wildlife, right? You can manage wildlife. I look at it like this: they're sideboards, okay? And when we write a plan, we say here's the right ways. How do you want us to manage it? And then our job as a biologist is to say, okay, now you're outside of that. That's a wrong way, and that's going to be detrimental in this way, or that's, we can't do that because of law, or we can't do that because of finances, or we can't do that because of... But as a biologist, primarily, there's a lot of right ways, but there are also some wrong ways. And a lot of right ways are all social. It's all social. Quality versus opportunity. And the truth is, both guys are right, right? If you want quality, it doesn't mean you're wrong. If you want opportunity, it doesn't mean you're wrong. It just means you have a different view.
Now for the real tough question, is the division ever wrong? Off the record.
Like the whole division or me?
You're not going to take that, Kobe, are you?
Troy, are we...
No, I'm asking.
About my personal life? Or
no. Has the division ever been wrong?
We're human. Yeah, we've made errors.
Of course. And that's my point. My point is this. But Sports, Fish, Wildlife, we support the division's recommendation. But I would advise the RAC, and I'm addressing your comments there, don't label sportsmen as a special interest group. The whole purpose for us to be here tonight is to vet this process. We're a team, we're a partnership. Just like I mentioned earlier, this group of sportsmen sat down and watched this same presentation 2 weeks before you guys did. They vetted it, they went through, they talked about it. They take in the science, they take in the social, and they come up with the recommendations. The only reasons why sportsmen or hunters in themselves attach themselves to an organization, whether it be the Mueller Foundation, whether it be Rocky Mountain Elk Foundation, NWTF, whatever, is to strengthen their voice, to unite their voice, to make sure that they're heard. And that's what we're here doing tonight, is, you know, please take into consideration what these go through. Now, you as a RAC, the whole purpose of you being here is to listen to the division's proposal, educate yourself the best you can on, make the decision, and also give sportsmen and the residents of Utah the opportunity to voice their concerns. But I do appreciate you being here. Thank you.
Thank you. We don't have any other cards from the public. Comments from the RAC. John.
I'd just like to say that as far as depredation from elk, that even though this winter didn't exist, the elk weren't a problem at all because they stayed up high. And I believe that one of the reasons they did is because they were turned around and headed back up several times by these cow elk hunts, or whatever you want to say, that happened at opportune times last fall when we did have some storms. The elk started to come down, and they were headed off by the cow elk hunters, and they were pushed back up high. So the purpose for reducing depredation definitely was successful. And I commend them for trying different things to see what works. You know, if we have a really bad winter, I imagine they'll be right down in our backyard again. But there should be more elk this year because of the good winter.
Thank you.
That's my theory.
Any other comments? If we have no other comments, we will accept motions.
Make a motion to accept DWR's proposal as presented.
Got a motion from Aaron and a second from Kevin to recommend they accept it as presented. Discussion on the motion. All in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous? Okay. Thank you. Number, what, 8? Oh, sorry, go ahead.
No, you're good.
I'm just writing.
All right, so I'm Mike Wortle. I'm the Private Lands Public Wildlife Coordinator for the Division of Wildlife. I'll be presenting our antlerless permit recommendations for CWMUs in 2018. So before I get into the individual recommendations, I just want to give a brief overview of how the CWMU program works in regards to the split between private permits and public permits. So if you look at the left side of this table, it shows the options that CWMU operators have when they look at the split for their buck and bull permits. And then whatever they choose on that left side directly correlates to the split they get for antlerless permits. So for example, if an operator chooses the 90-10 split, which is the top there for deer and elk, 90% of their tags are private and 10% are public. If they choose that, when they get antlerless permits, 100% of those permits go to the public. So what that's created is a lot of opportunity with antlerless permits on private property. So the number I'll draw your attention to, this table shows the summary statewide of how many permits we're recommending on CWMUs. But the number I'll draw your attention to is that number in the bottom right-hand corner of 819. That's 819 hunters that are going to be allowed access on private property to hunt antlerless animals. One other thing I'll talk about too, what I've done in our recommendations is I've highlighted the changes. I've highlighted the increases and the decreases. And I wanted beforehand to go over why we increase and some of the reasons behind why we decrease permits on a CWMU. So with increase, the big thing is opportunity. If the resource is there, we want to provide that opportunity. Then also to manage the population objectives. CWMU stands for Cooperative Wildlife Management Unit. Especially here in the northern region, We really rely on a lot of these CWMUs to help us get to management objectives. And some of the reasons behind decreasing permits, we look at harvest success. We don't want to throw a permit out to the public that they're not going to have a good experience. And a big thing with CWMUs is animal distribution. So CWMUs are different than our public units, right? They're limited to private property within the CWMU, and the distribution can be different on each CWMU, and we look at that every year. So with that, we'll get into the individual applications. This first set will be the renewals. CWMUs operate within a 3-year certificate of registration, and these CWMUs that you'll see were taken before the board to have their COR renewed this past fall, and these are the antlerless permit numbers that go along with those renewals. So on the Bear Springs CWMU, we're recommending antlerless elk permits, and we're recommending an increase in antlerless elk permits on the Coldwater Ranch and East Fork Chalk Creek, and a decrease in elk permits on Ensign Ranches and Lone Tree Taylor Hollow. We're recommending a decrease in antlerless elk permits on Meadow Creek, which was formerly known as Twin Peaks Goose Creek, and recommending a decrease in pronghorn permits on Deseret. In the central region, we're recommending an increase in antlerless elk permits on Bear Mountain and 3C, and recommending doe pronghorn permits on West Lake. In the northeastern region, we're recommending doe pronghorn permits on Antelope Creek, and a decrease in antlerless elk permits on Little Red Creek, Moon Ranch, and Sand Creek. In the southeastern region, we're recommending decreases on antlerless elk permits for Hiawatha, Preston Nutter Ranch, Schofield Canyons, Schofield East, Soldier Summit, Spring Creek Dodge, and Summit Point. And we're recommending an increase in antlerless elk permits on Indian Head and Jump Creek. In the southern region, we're recommending a decrease in antlerless elk permits for the Alton CWMU. And then we did have a couple change applications. So when a CWMU wants to change their so when these are approved, they're approved for the 3 years of the life of their COR, those 3 years. If a CWMU, or if we feel like we need to change those permit numbers throughout that COR, they submit a change application. And we had two of those this year, and they were both here in the northern region. And the first one was Junction Valley. We're recommending an increase in 10-2 doe permits for doe antlerless deer there, and then recommending decreasing doe pronghorn permits to 0 on Rabbit Creek. And with that, I'll take any questions. Thank you.
Questions from the public on the presentation? You want to?
Right there.
All right. On Meadow Creek, being. Meadow Creek, you're recommending a decrease in antlerless tags. Okay. Now we.
By the way, his name's Larry. So.
Oh. All right. So Whitaker. when we look back on that, Twin Peaks is now Meadow Creek.
Right.
But that is a land swap deal, and the land involved in what was the permits were on last year is now different than the land you're allowing the permits on this year that you're decreasing. How do you justify that?
I don't know if the region has a better answer for that. I would say that as the land is changing, I think it makes sense that we would recommend a change in our permits as well, which is probably what part of the reason why we're recommending a decrease in 2 permits there.
Yeah. Well, I don't want to get into an argument about what is, because you know we've kind of discussed this, but basically the ground that you exchanged was what they call Simplot ranches. That has been closed for years and years and years. And now the ground that you have now included into Meadow Creek is now 10 thousand and something acres of public accessible ground that's now been placed in a CMW, and reducing the tags to it doesn't jive.
Right. So with that, I looked at, because we talked before the meeting, and I looked up their application this year, and when there is public land included in a CWMU, we ask the CW, part of the rule is that they have to have a, what's the word I'm looking for, something that helps even out that with the public. I can't think of the word I'm looking for. But anyways, a compensation for the public. So what they've done is we've added more permits to the public draw on that CWMU, and there's also over 6,000 private acres that are open to public access because of the public land that's included in their CWMU.
Okay. Thank you.
So, to follow, any more questions from the public? So, to follow up to his question, out of that 10,000 acres in this particular CWMU you're talking about, is technically or traditionally we've only allowed landlocked public land to go into a CWMU. Is there a lot of that 10,000 acres that's completely accessible public land that we've included in there, and why?
So Chad can probably speak better to this. One thing I will say is in the rule, it allows for public land if it's necessary to, or if it's landlocked, like you mentioned, if it's necessary to have an enforceable boundary, and then also if it's necessary to achieve management goals for the unit. With this one, I don't know, Chad, do you have anything else to add on that?
Yeah, Chad Wilson, the wildlife biologist out there. So this would be to help us reach our management objectives. It was there, and to answer the question, there is public land that is accessible out there.
Okay.
But it kind of tied in Will Bedke's land with the Simplot land to make it so that we could have a better management out there. And it was done quite a few years ago and was grandfathered in.
Okay.
Did that take away a public opportunity by doing that?
Yeah, I would say that it did, just because there is public land that's accessible. So I don't know, like I've been out there for a year, so I don't know all the ins and outs yet, but I mean, just off that statement, yeah, I mean, looking at it, it probably did take some, but gave us better management tools.
That number three thing you mentioned, mm-hmm. that can be used and abused in a lot of places in the state, so I don't even like that rule, but anyway, thanks, Chad. Any other questions from the RAC on the presentation?
I have a quick one. So Deseret, Pronghorn right there, there's a decrease of 32. I don't think that reflects on the RAC packet that you gave us. Can you talk a little bit more about why on that one? We increased permits on Pronghorn for the we increased the antler permit, so talk about the decrease here.
Okay, yeah, I'd probably defer to the region.
Randy Wood, what we did is, as Covey mentioned earlier in the buck and bulls, we changed the way we are hunting them, which led to an increase in permits for bucks. Then when we look at controlling the population and depredation, we then go to the antlerless. And as I showed you earlier, pretty well across the board, there was a decrease in Dauphin permits for pronghorn there. Did that cover it?
Yeah, I just need to do more research myself, I think, before I come ask more questions. So that was good. Thank you.
So I guess I got a question. We're only talking about antlerless here than you.
Yeah. Yep. These are just antlerless permits.
Okay. But we're setting the when did we set?
So buck and bull permits were set in the fall when we looked at the renewal of the COR.
Okay, but all these decreases should have effect on their buck and bull numbers, correct? because that percentage is tied to what they get buck and bull wise to what they give out antlerless wise, correct?
So the splits are tied, right? The percentage of private versus public, those are tied together, but the number of permits that's allotted to the CWMU necessarily isn't tied to it, right? There's a lot of CWMUs where we give buck deer tags, but we don't give antlerless deer tags due to population objectives or whatever else.
So my question though is if it's going to go down on Deseret by 32 on the antlerless, is it going to go down on their buck?
No, not necessarily.
If you're going 90-10.
If you're going 90-10, how does that not?
I don't know if they chose that.
Mr. Chairman, maybe some light is kind of what we do is we manage the two different buck and bulls are done on rotation, age a year, and then the antlerless are to address problems with depredation, overall herd size, that or herd size. So that would really bring it down. Most of your units, at least in the northern region, of the buck to doe criteria, the CWMUs are meeting and the units are over for the buck to bulls. In fact, there's probably more opportunity out there than they do. And then the antlerless portion of it is what we use to decrease populations, especially with elk in the northern region, that, as you know, we're over, and address any depredation issues with them. And a lot of the CWMUs have started to step up, and especially out west, Box Elder, when we have a depredation issue, we can go to the to them, and they come out and count and haze for us on the ag ground. Some CWMUs have expanded and taken in ag ground so that we don't have depredation or counts or anything on that. But we manage the two differently. Does that help?
Yeah. I guess I was thinking, I mean, we go off a percentage. And So when we're not giving...
And maybe I didn't explain that clearly. So these percentages are strictly talking about the split. So say we give a CWMU 10 buck and bull permits, that means that 9 permits would be private and 1 permit would go to the public draw. But if we give them 20 antlerless permits, 100% of those are to the public draw. Whether that 20 or 10 goes up, it doesn't affect the other. It's the split that is directly connected.
Any other comments or questions? Comments?
Or you got a question? I had a question. As far as hunter satisfaction on the cow hunts on CWMUs, how those came?
So we had in? So pretty good. We had 128 CWMUs, and we only had 3 official complaints turned in this year. And when a complaint is turned in, there's a process for that. We have a CWMU advisory committee that meets every year to address those complaints. We bring in the operator, bring in the complainant, and if there's wrong on the operator side, that's typically brought before the Wildlife Board, and they can have their COR revoked and the program taken away.
That's pretty good odds. I just heard the 3 people complain, so I was curious what the other ones were. That's good to know.
No more questions. We don't have any comment cards from the public. Go back to comments from the rack and or motions.
I'll make a motion that we accept the division's proposal with the CWMU antlerless permit recommendations to accept them as proposed.
Motion, we got a second? Matt? Accept it as presented. All in favor? Passed unanimously.
Thank you.
The last one we...
Wildlife Bounce is paying for him right now.
Okay. We got Rick Olson presenting on the last one on the poaching reward.
Let me get that from you. Just put it there if you want. Or I can do it.
Okay,
That'll be awesome.
My name's Rick Olson. I'm the chief of law enforcement for the division. Not Captain Shirley. He couldn't make it tonight, so being a good boss, I let him go on vacation so I get to present this. But anyway, I'm going to present recommended changes to the poaching reported reward permit program. Now, that's a tongue twister, so I'm just going to refer to that as the reward permit throughout the presentation. Okay, the things that I'll discuss is a little bit of the purpose and the history of the program, the current rule structure, the proposed consolidation of three different rules into one, and we're recommending that we add bear permits to the program, as well as cougar, both harvest objective and limited entry. We're going to expand the program also. We're recommending to expand it to include the general season deer units and the general elk. And we'll define better what a qualifying person is and what permits are available. Okay, so this program was formally started in about 1996. It works in conjunction or in tandem with our monetary reward program. It's been primarily used for deer and elk on highly sought after units. As I mentioned before, the rule used to be, we had it in the big game rule, the cougar rule, the turkey rule, and who qualified and the verbiage in each one of them were a little bit different. Not by design, but any time you have this in one rule, and then you go to expand it, somebody types in a little bit of different verbiage, and it just kept getting worse. So we'd like to consolidate that into one rule and make the language consistent. Okay, this graph shows the number of permits we issue every year. As you can see, we don't issue a lot of these in a year. The highest number of permits we've ever issued in one year is 17. Now the breakdown of those permits is right here. So it averages about 10 permits a year. Okay, so who would qualify for one of these permits? It's anyone who provides accurate, credible information regarding a wildlife violation in Utah that the division can use to secure a prosecution, and the person has to cooperate and support the division through the whole process. So someone can't turn something in and then refuse to testify in the end and still qualify for one of these permits. They have to cooperate through the whole course of the investigation. Now, whether we get an adjudication of guilt or not guilty doesn't matter, just that the charges are filed and the person cooperates. So a successful prosecution can be either a Class B misdemeanor citation or charges filed with the county attorney, only for Section 23, Utah Code 2320 and 4, which is our wanton destruction statute, which requires a person commit the violation knowingly, intentionally, or recklessly. The other category, and where it is used mostly, is the filing of charges for a Class A or a felony. Okay, what hunts would qualify under this proposal? And these are all male species on the top. So buck, deer, bull elk, pronghorn, moose, bighorn, sheep, mountain goat, bison, cougar, bear, and turkey. Would only apply to a unit if there are 10 or more public draw permits on the unit, and the permits issued could not exceed 10% of the total permits on the unit. Now, important to remember, these permits are not taken away from the public. These are on the top of any numbers that you guys approved. So the public, there's no ill effect to the public. There are no multi-season options, but the person can choose what weapon they'd like to use. But they have to choose rifle, muzzleloader, or archery. And there's only one permit can be issued for a successful prosecution. Okay, impacts on the hunter. This is for the hunter that would get the permit. They don't forfeit bonus or preference points. They don't incur a waiting period except for the once-in-a-lifetime species. If you were issued one of these reward permits, you could not ever obtain or put in for a draw unit for that same species again. You could still put in for the draw for expo tags, or you could buy a tag on a CWMU. You can only have one reward permit in a single calendar year for specie. Believe it or not, there's a lot of people. Your odds are actually better to go out and try to catch a poacher on some of these units than they are to draw. So put your money into gas and a good set of binoculars and look for it. You could still only possess one permit for an antlered or horned animal of the same species in a single year. So if you had already drawn a permit or purchased one through a CWMU, if you already had a permit and you qualified for one of these reward permits, you would have to surrender that original permit if you wanted the reward permit. Or you could just choose to have it in another year. That's an option as well. They're non-transferable, but they're still part, you could still use them as part of the mentor program or the trial hunting program. And the hunter still must possess a valid hunting or combination license. So if you were a poacher and you were suspended and you turned in your buddy who's still poaching, you couldn't get a permit for that.
Shoots my theory down.
Okay, so this, I'll go through the process for each set of species. For the once-in-lifetime species, the permit would be for a male animal or hunter's choice in case of like Rocky Mountain goat or bison. So for the same species on the same unit as the illegal animal was taken. If for some reason that was not available, say there wasn't more than 10 permits on that unit, then you would have the choice of the same species on an alternate unit closest in proximity to where that animal was taken. If that wasn't available, then you could choose another once-in-a-lifetime species still closest to where that animal was taken. If that still wasn't available, then you could qualify for a permit of a male animal on a limited entry species on an alternate unit selected by the division. Now these, in reality, we will never get to options 3 or 4 there. But we wanted to write this looking into the future with how things could change so we wouldn't have to revisit this every year or two. And if you look back at the slide how many we give, you're never going to get down to those 3rd or 4th options. Okay, the process on the premium limited entry unit, which we only have 2 in the state right now, would be for, if you turn in a poacher on the Pontagon, you qualify for a permit there. If we didn't have enough permits there, then you could get one for Henry Mountains or vice versa. Again, if that still wasn't available, then you could go to any limited entry unit closest to where that happened. Okay, on the limited entry deer and elk, the processes for all these are always the same. You have to qualify for a permit where the animal was illegally taken. If that wasn't available, you go to the same species, but to the next closest in proximity unit. General season deer and elk. Now, we wanted to include this because we've had requests from the public when they turn in poachers on these general deer units if there was a permit available. Now, these permits are always up to the hunter. They can choose a monetary reward if they want to. But some of these hunters are now saying that, you know, it's getting harder and harder to draw even some of these general season units. And they would rather have a permit, a $40 permit, than $200 or $300 or $400 monetary reward so they could still hunt with their family. So we don't know how much this will be utilized. Probably not a lot to begin with. Most people are still going to take $400 over a $40 tax. But it's the same process on the general season deer and elk. You would qualify for a tag on that same unit or the next closest one. Cougar, we've had this before. This doesn't change too much other than we've added more clarification in here. If the illegal kill was on a harvest objective unit, the permit would be for a limited entry unit closest to that harvest objective unit. So on some of them splits, it would be the same unit. But if you had a unit that was totally harvest objective, you would qualify for the closest limited entry unit to there. And the process for bear, this would be new. We're recommending we add bear. We get a lot of requests for people that turn in bear poachers for a bear permit. So we're adding bear, recommending we add bear to that. Now, it's interesting on the cougar, if you went back to the first slide, we have never issued a cougar reward permit. We would, but nobody's requested one. So not sure why, but we are pretty confident we would have requests for bears. So. Turkey, we've had turkey in the past also. We used to utilize turkeys quite a bit back when you had to pick a unit to hunt. And the way the hunt's structured now, we don't get many requests for turkey permits, but we still wanted to make that an option. So if you turned in someone who illegally took a general season and limited, or a limited entry unit, you could either get a limited entry tag where that animal was killed, or you could pick a general tag that's good for any of your options. Okay, and that's all I have.
Thank you. Questions from the public on the presentation? Questions from the rack?
What was the purpose of the waiting period on the once in a lifetime? Maybe I didn't hear it.
That's according to our attorneys, once in a lifetime is once in a lifetime. For a permit given by the state, and that we couldn't vary from that.
But if someone had max points, so what? Basically, they turned it in. If they took the permit, they're 5 years behind, and they're
right.
Probably won't get it. Or
yeah.
So why
if
not?
If you had max points, I would probably choose a monetary reward for that. Because
so
if you chose the permit, you'd get it. But then
so instead of a five-year period, you could just say you either choose this permit, you get it or you don't, but this would be your once-in-a-lifetime permit.
Yeah.
All right.
John?
So what would happen if you already had drawn that permit?
That's my next question.
Say somebody poached a moose. I've already killed a moose.
If you've already drawn that permit and you turn in another moose poacher, then you would go to them options. That wouldn't be available. So you would be qualified to get a permit for another once-in-a-lifetime species closest to that unit.
Okay.
Which for moose is probably going to be goat.
Mm-hmm. So you could choose that. If I had max points and caught a poacher, I could say I'd rather have a goat. Probably not going to. I'd try to find one near a desert sheep. But,
yeah,
okay.
Just choose where you want to catch people.
You can't move the kill site.
Okay.
Any other questions? Comments? We don't have any comment cards. Comments from the rack? Comments and/or?
Oh.
I just want to commend the division for this program. I think it works. I think it encourages people to go the extra mile to help catch and prosecute people that steal our wildlife. So I just wanted to say thank you for that.
Okay, thank you. I probably failed to mention that. The real reason we came up with this program was to incentivize people to turn in friends, family. It's not too hard to turn in a stranger, but it's pretty hard to turn in one of your relatives, and we get a lot of those in a year. In fact, quite a few of them. We'll let you choose. If you get one of these permits, you don't have to take it the very next year. And some people choose to take it. I want one in 5 years so it doesn't look so fishy.
Has anybody ever turned in a spouse?
Excuse me?
A spouse?
Oh, yeah.
Right, yeah. Before the divorce?
Well, yeah, they're usually right before the ex. But really. Okay. We really should look at divorce records and kind of start reaching out in a proactive manner.
Motions.
I'll make the motion.
Mike?
Make the motion that we accept the program as presented and the changes.
Okay. Got a motion and a second to accept it as presented. Any discussion on the motion? All in favor, raise your hand. Unanimous. I think that's. Thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you.
I think that's. That's it. So.
Kevin Norman, will you say the closing prayer?
We will dismiss. Thank you guys for coming.